Comics.
Movies.
Music.
Video games.
Technology.
Blu-ray.
Television.
This is the HHW LOD Podcast Network.
Spider-Man, Spider-Man, does whatever a spider can.
Is he strong? Listen, man, he got the radioactive blood. Hey there! There goes the Spider-Man. Oh! Is he strong? Listen, man, he got the radioactive blood. Can he swing from a friend? Take a look over here. Hey there! There goes the Spider-Man.
Are now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and as always, this is
Abe in studio.
We are together again.
Woo-hoo!
In the same room. Other things to shout.
Loud noises.
Out Now is a film podcast that Abe and I discussing new movies weekly. We also bring in discussion about the latest movie trailers, box office results and predictions, a callback to past films similar to the main film of the week, games and other fun stuff. This is episode 64, and we are going to talk about The Amazing Spider-Man this week. And joining us to discuss The Amazing Spider-Man, we have co-host for Legion of Dudes and the Walking Dead TV podcast, the man who is now Spider-Man No More, issue 50, Jordan from Jersey.
Hey, guys.
And we have the writer for Damn Dirty Blog, the one man who could cause maximum carnage around town, Jordan Grout.
Hello, this is Jordan Grout.
That is Jordan Grout.
Causing carnage around.
Hello, carnage.
Okay, so we're all here.
That's a pleasure to be here.
Good, great. We're here. Abe and I are together. It's awesome. We're in the same room. It's gonna be pretty cool. We have two Jordans. We have one Aaron. We have one Abe. We have two A's and two J's, making it and a JJ. And new announcements. Let's see. iTunes reviews and ratings. Always good to get those. Helps out the show. Log on to iTunes. Really simple to do. Give us a star rating thing. Maybe if you want to, type a sentence. Everybody wins in this situation. It's a nice thing to do. Awesome. Let's see. We got some emails and questions and stuff. Let me pull those up right now, actually.
Wait. Do we have a jingle for this?
You want to create a jingle for this?
Here's the mail, it never fails, it makes me want to wag my tail.
That was good. Jingle in. Okay, here we go. This one, I believe, is from James Connor. Twitter question. Does the need to retain rights to a character guarantee to eventually oversaturate market, or can turn it into a sustainable long-term franchise, e.g. Bond?
It all depends on the script.
Yeah, I basically agree with that. I mean, as long as it's, a good entry in the... I don't feel oversaturated by Spider-Man, per se. There's, like, four Spider-Man movies, but...
I don't necessarily think that it oversaturates it. I mean, I think that the timing was just a little bit weird, but that was just because they need to renew the license. But it's just... I don't think it necessarily would oversaturate. I think people have... They still remember the Raimi stuff, but at the same time, it's been a while since you remembered... get Spider-Man, I guess. So.
That's just Spider-Man. I mean, other the Fast and the Furious franchise. I mean, that movie, the last movie, is arguably the best of that franchise, and I don't feel oversaturated by Fast. I'm looking forward to seeing more installments of the Fast and Furious franchise. Fix Furious.
I mean, as long as we get a Scream movie every 5 years.
Scream movie? We get. I know Abe would want.
I'd love that.
Yeah. All right, we got kind of a thing from Mike Blakemore, who didn't win our contest last week, but he did put in a thing about his favorite Pixar character. So I'm just going to read it. He'd have to say Woody. Tom Hanks really brings that character to life. Another reason is that I bought a Woody doll for my nephew, and it was his favorite toy for years. Woody would say, "There's a snake in my boot," and my nephew would always check his shoes, getting excited for both Spider-Man and Batman episodes. Looking forward to your review on both films, loyal listener, Mike Blakemore. Thanks, Mike. And yeah, as I said, past winners couldn't win the Pixar contest, but thanks for putting in your two thoughts. Always welcome. And a winner of the Pixar contest, Kyle Roz, he just seems really excited about the fact that he won.
Yes.
Because, he used several expletives in his email responding to the fact that I told him that he won, and that's just funny.
His headline is great, or I mean, his like his message line is great.
And but I can assure people that listen to the show, it's not hard to win these contests. All you have to do is just email in when we say you have a pretty good chance.
I think you basically have like a 33% chance of winning.
Yeah, it's
like three people. You know, you're one of the three.
Yeah. Get back to other announcements. What else do I have here? We got I'm going to be at Comic-Con next week, and
awesome.
Yeah, I'll be there. And I think believe friend of the show Alan Aguilera is going to be there, and you know. If you happen to recognize my voice, I guess, like you're at Comic-Con also, say hi, you know, I don't care, whatever.
Or just fill up the Facebook page with that.
Yeah, I'll probably be constantly tweeting it. Anyway. You'll probably be able to find me in like 2 seconds flat. It'd be pretty simple. But yeah, I'll be out there, and Alan and I, if we get a chance, we meet up with each other, we'll probably like record some like little tidbits or something, we'll see, maybe put it into one of the shows. Find out. And let's see, what else? Let's see. We might be doing spoilers for Spider-Man at the end of this. Not sure yet. We'll talk about that later. We might have a special like Savages mini review in there later.
We might.
Maybe, and I are going to go see Savages today, so maybe we'll put that in with some reactions after we see the film. So here we go. It's halfway through the year, guys. About halfway through, and we have I had a question for everyone. Favorite films of the year so far? And what's everyone's like top three, top five favorite films of the year so far, just to kind of get that out there? So let's start with Jordan from Jersey.
Oh, let's see here. Top three, I'd have to go Avengers number one, probably Cabin in the Woods number two. And then for three, I haven't seen a lot of films this year, but I'd probably go with The Amazing Spider-Man.
Cool. Jordan Graff?
Number one, I would say The Gray. Number two, I would say as well Cabin in the Woods. And number three, I'd say 21 Jump Street. I love that movie.
It's a funny movie.
Cool.
Yeah. But I have not seen Beasts of the Southern Wild, and everyone says that is the best movie.
You've not seen
so
Beasts of
the It may change in the next
it's week. We're going to be talking about that next week on the show.
Okay.
We're going to talk about that next week on the show, so we'll see what everybody thinks then. Abe, what are your top three so far?
I got to echo Jordan with the Gray. And then I had The Avengers and also Moonrise Kingdom. I enjoyed that film a lot.
I so want to see that movie. I haven't gotten around to it
yet. It's one to check out, especially if you like the Wes Anderson is past flicks. It's got his touch in every scene.
Yeah, the thing about Moonrise Kingdom is, like, I think it's, for Wes Anderson fans, you're going to love this movie. And for non-Wes Anderson fans, you might actually love this movie.
I think that's
the best thing you can say about Moonrise Kingdom. My favorite films of the year so far, I got five of them. I have The Gray, Cabin in the Woods, The Raid Redemption, I love. Seeking a Friend for the End of the World, I also really enjoy quite a bit. And then Moonrise Kingdom. All right, let's get to know everybody. Where each week we ask each other a few questions and try to set the tone for the podcast so we can better get to know everybody. So, let's start with Abe.
All right, let's go with Jordan from Jersey. We've had Stephen, and now we've had Andrew Garfield. What other actor do you think would make a good Peter Parker?
I have an answer for this, by the way.
Ooh, that's a good question. As an older Peter Parker, I think Jim from The Office might actually work pretty well.
Huh.
Whose name is escaping me at the moment because I'm terrible with names. But
John Krasinski. Yeah.
John Krasinski, yeah. I think he could work as an older Peter Parker.
Okay. He's goofy.
He's got the hair.
Yeah.
I'd certainly be curious now, after having seen the new Spider-Man and Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man, of course, because there's all that hubbub about Donald Glover, since he just said it as in passing, and then it turned into, hey, internet, let's explode with ideas for this.
I think he could also do a very good job, although I don't know that, for me, he fits my... I mean, he's a good actor, but I don't know that his personality fits my idea of what a Peter Parker should be. In a very different way than I think Tobey Maguire didn't fit that role, but.
And the other one I had, DJ Qualls.
He's so skinny.
What is DJ Qualls as Peter Parker?
Would you be doing that version of Spider-Man like they did Captain America, where he's like pre Spider Bite Peter Parker?
There you go. Yeah, that'd be great.
And then he gets bit by the spider and turns into Donald Glover. Right?
What about let's get Aziz Ansari in this movie
as Spider-Man?
He'd be Flash Thompson.
Yeah.
Aaron, if you were ever forced to go to Comic-Con in cosplay, what character would you go as? Comic book, anime, movie, doesn't matter.
Oh, well, let's see. I dressed up as Afro Samurai for Halloween once. I tried to do that for Comic-Con.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, I'd be pretty down with doing that. Or more obscure, but I'd try to be Moses from Attack the Block.
That would be awesome.
That'd be pretty cool.
You need that nice shift, and people would be like...
It'd be pretty, he just looks like a black thug guy. Why is he here?
You need, like, a katana and everything, too. Yeah.
All right. Actually, I have another one for Jordan from Jersey.
All right.
What Spider-Man villain do you want to see next?
Ooh, well, and this kind of goes into spoiler territory, but not necessarily, because nothing's been confirmed, but there's been rumors that we've already had Electro hinted at in this movie, and I'd like to see a good version of Electro done, and I think that could be something very different for the next one.
That'd be cool.
Maxwell Dillon. August Jordan Grout.
Yes.
If you can only have one of Spider-Man's powers, which one would you choose?
I would choose... Spider sense, Spidey sense.
Same here.
So you'd always hear who's coming from behind?
Yes. Exactly. All right. Hey.
Yeah.
Hey, so originally, Chris Cooper was cast as the Lizard. Do you think he would have done a better job than Reese Fons?
It's hard to say, because I've already been spoiled by seeing Reese Fons as Dr. Kirk Connor, so it'd be hard to say, but
Well, just think of him as the villain in the Muppets movie, but greener.
Singing?
But
yeah.
Greener. And singing stuff.
I was actually thinking of Adaptation. I was like, yeah, he's all grimy, and he's got, like, a shotgun and stuff.
That's the alligator. That's Killer Croc. That's different.
In the final fight, Peter says, I don't want your life.
There are photos online of early concept art for the Lizard that was molded off of Chris Cooper's face from his features.
I'm going to add that to the notes.
I'm pretty sure that he'd take a good Dr. Kirk Connor / Lizard. So, I mean, there's no doubt, but I like Reese Fons as Kirk Connor. Although they kind of shafted
Dylan Baker.
Yeah, Dylan Baker, yeah, who was in Spider-Man
1 through 3.
Yeah. And that's a bummer, but, you know. Okay, Aaron. Who was a better Flash Thompson, in the Raimi series or in the Mark Webb series?
Oh, the Amazing Spider-Man wins hands down because you have the one scene where he throws the basketball, or he knocks the basketball away, and it hits like the girl's paint and it falls in her flyer, and she's like, "You did that on purpose," and he's like, "Yeah, you better watch your back," and I cracked up at this. Like, why does she need to watch her? Is he going to beat her up later? Like, what's happening? This is amazing.
You said amazing.
No, it was amazing. It fit the title. I was that impressed with Flash Thompson in this movie. But I did,
and even better, he wears the Spider-Man t-shirt.
I did. Yeah, right. Yeah. There were, like, I liked that there was kind of shades to... I wish there was more to him, but there were more shades to this Flash Thompson than the Raimi Spider-Man, where he's just
roided up.
He's just roided up and like a dick. Who was played by Al Seed in True Blood, and he was in Magic Mike, too, that guy.
Is it Magic Mike?
Yeah, that's the same. It's a Joe Manganiello.
Oh, that's
I did not realize that.
I don't know what you wouldn't take by looking at him. It's like, I realized that after I was looking at the credits, like, wait, what?
Flash Thompson is a werewolf?
He's Man-Wolf. He took it from JJJ's son.
If they ever spin off this Flash Thompson into Venom, but then they add some werewolf qualities, that could be a quality movie.
That'd be something. Hmm. All right, Jordan from Jordan Grout.
Yeah.
Okay. Spider-Man and Ghost Rider are both owned by Sony. Explain to me the style and plot of Ghost Rider meets Spider-Man.
Ooh.
I have a comic that Spider-Man and Ghost Rider teaming up, actually.
I think that's the same comic, actually.
It's terrible.
So, Nicolas Cage, right? He's in Las Vegas, and he is Ghost Rider at his later years. And he's a raging alcoholic. And Peter Parker comes along one day, and they get to talking. And, you know, they have a few drinks, and they go back to his room. And it becomes more than a friendship. And it's, you can call it...
So the spider sense really comes in handy then.
Yeah, and he really shoots his webbing in this movie.
You're saying Ghost Rider's a bottom?
You can call it, if it's directed, definitely directed by Mark Webb. It's called 69 Days of Summer.
I like that there's going to be like a split screen sequence where it's reality versus expectation.
Yeah. Peter Parker looking very glum. And that's how you play.
No, everybody. So let's move on to movie trailer talk, where we discuss.
I feel like I know way too much about Jordan.
We're going to talk about a couple of the newest movie trailers, and let's start with the first one, which is another comic book adaptation that comes out later this year. It is called Dread, or Dread 3D. It is this new Judge Dredd movie. We, of course, had the original Judge Dredd film with Sylvester Stallone making a really bad impression for people on what they should think about Judge Dredd. But this new one has Carl Urban as Judge Dredd, and
he's not a doctor, he's a judge.
He's a judge. Yeah, exactly. So let's start with Jordan from Jersey. What did you think of the Dredd trailer?
I thought it was all right. I haven't really read a lot of Judge Dredd stuff, so I don't really have a lot to compare it to, and it's been a long time since I saw the Sylvester Stallone film, thankfully. That said, I know that Carl Urban himself is a huge Judge Dredd fan, and that he was kind of the impetus for getting this movie off the ground. So in that regard, it looks like it at least has firm footing in terms of sticking to the continuity. That said, I don't know that I really care.
All right. Jordan Grapp?
It's a shame that it looks like a remake of The Raid, even though it's, you know, they were filmed at roughly the same time and had no knowledge of one another. It looks good, but it's a shame that people are going to attack it and already have attacked it for looking like the same film. I want to see it. It looks fun. Lena Olin is an interesting choice to play the villain. It has... isn't the actress in it from Juno, right?
Yeah. Olivia Thirlby, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I thought you meant Juno. I was going to say, I didn't realize she was in
Juno the Guff is in here.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Abe?
It looks interesting. I definitely got that Raid Redemption vibe from it as well. As well as...
let's just call it The Raid.
The Raid, yeah.
Dread Redemption.
Yeah. And then I also got vibes of Max Payne, probably because all the slow-mo stuff.
As in the game?
As in the Mark Wahlberg Mila Kunis movie.
What action stuff was in that movie? Because I don't recall much.
Slow motion of him, like, shooting green. Anyway,
yeah, there's that one scene.
I don't know. It looks like something I'd want to go check out just to see how different it is. It's probably going to be very different. But at the same time, I don't know. If it's ridiculous over the top, I think I'd enjoy that more than it taking itself incredibly seriously.
I kind of think it could take itself pretty seriously and be okay with that just because Judge Dredd is a pretty serious guy. He's basically a fascist. Watching the trailer, yeah, The Raid Redemption seemed like a clear kind of comparison in terms of I've seen people invade a building and fight through it all the way before, but still, I'm interested. I like the Judge Dredd character in the comics, and there's kind of some loose fun I could have with the Sylvester Stallone movie, which is pretty god-awful, but also kind of like, hey, Rob Schneider's here making witty jokes on the side, if for some reason Judge Dredd took off his helmet in that version, which is weird, but I've been assured that Carl Urban's not going to take off his helmet throughout this movie, so that's something to hope for. And, you know, it's in 3D, right? So you're supposed to love it automatically. But, yeah, well, I guess we'll see.
Is that something that doesn't really happen a lot? He doesn't take off his helmet?
He doesn't take off his helmet.
Ever.
That's it.
Okay.
No, there's no helmet taken off. It's on.
There was a tragic glue incident.
Yeah. Exactly. Just like Sideshow Mel and that bone. In
oh, no.
Armand Asante better have a cameo in this.
Yeah, there needs to be more Armand Asante, who is supposed to be Sylvester Stallone's, like, twin in that movie, right? There's a commentary of the maker right there, the Judge Dredd movie. Okay, so Dredd 3D opens in September 21st, 2012. And, we'll see. Actually, there's a screening at Comic-Con next week, so I might be able to see it, but we'll see. The next trailer we have is from writer-director The RZA of Wu-Tang. It is called The Man with the Iron Fists. It is presented by Quentin Tarantino. Eli Roth co-wrote the movie, and it stars Russell Crowe, Lucy Liu, RZA, Jamie Chung.
Yeah.
And a whole host of other people. Russell Crowe is the one that throws me off every time I say it. But
Russell Crowe and his mustache both appear in the film.
Pam Grier. Dave Bautista. Oh, God. So, this is a movie that's very much it seems like a long time coming for like RZA and Wu-Tang in general, but it involves, here's the description. In feudal Japan, a blacksmith, played by RZA, who makes weapons for a small village, is put in the position where he must defend himself and his fellow villagers. And it looks like Lucy Liu's like a crazy mad woman, Russell Crowe's here as like some kind of Western guy with guns and swordplay action, and just a whole bunch of kind of classic kung fu movie mixed with kind of the modern take on this sort of style. It looks like it could potentially be amazing.
Hilarity ensues.
And it could easily bomb in theaters, which it probably will. But I'm still interested in this movie. But what say you guys? Jordan Grout?
Oh man, Russell Crowe is aging into like a bloated toad, isn't he? But he looks awesome in the movie. He looks fantastic. I can't wait to see it. I was reminded of what was that? Warrior's Way.
Yeah.
From like 2 years ago. And I had a blast with that. I thought that was a whole lot of fun. And that didn't do well either at the box office. So yeah, it looks great. In my opinion, it looks so absurd that it has to be fun.
Jordan from Jersey.
Where does this fall within the Mortal Kombat movie continuity exactly? I don't know. It's not really my thing. It looks competently made, but like I said, not really something that interests me in particular. Unless it crosses over with the Man in the Iron Mask in some bizarre way.
Leonardo DiCaprio just shows up.
Yeah. Just fist versus mask.
This movie looks, I don't know, I didn't really get a great strong vibe from it at all. It kind of looks ridiculous, and I hope that it doesn't take itself crazy serious. It reminds me a lot of like Kung Fu Hustle, and it gives me a lot of vibe of Ninja Assassin, which I thought looked great too, and then I saw it and I'm like, this is just an awful movie.
Yeah, that was disappointing. That was a disappointing movie.
So it's a bummer, so I hope that this one, if it's not like, you know, crazy stupid, it's just like crazy funny. I'm not getting my hopes up too high.
Was Ninja Assassin one that was like cowboys versus ninjas?
No, that's the Warrior's Way.
Yeah.
Ah,
like
okay, gotcha.
The Asian dude and the white girl, right?
Yeah. Lois Lane from Superman Return. Kate Bosworth.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And Jeffrey Rush is there going, ninjas, damn.
This movie is definitely not taking itself seriously. No. It's so apparent from the trailer.
I know, and I'm looking forward to the soundtrack too. I mean, when you have the RZA involved in the movie, that means the soundtrack is going to be amazing right away. Yeah, we'll see. I guess Man of the Iron Fist. I assume it's coming out this year, but there's no release date as yet. It just is coming soon. So hopefully, it comes out right in that sweet spot of Thanksgiving.
Along with.
That's when the Ninja Assassin came out, and that's when you know. Okay, here we go.
Rise of the Guardians is going to be competing hard.
Yeah, I saw Ninja Assassin, and then jumped to Fantastic Mr. Fox afterwards. It was an amazing.
That was a great double feature. At least you were satisfied at the end.
Yeah.
I just intercepted a high frequency radio transmission on a can.
It should come out the same weekend as Twilight.
It might. There's counter programming.
Yep.
Okay, so that's the Man with the Iron Fist. That's a movie that's coming out.
Oh man.
let's move on. Let's do it. Let's go on to the main review. Woo! To Spider-Man. Amazing Spider-Man time.
This life is not an easy one. I've made enemies. Powerful enemies. Put those I love in danger. But the one thing that has haunted me my entire life is finding the truth about my parents.
You're a wanted man, Peter Parker.
You don't believe what the police are saying, do you?
My dad has 500 officers looking for you.
500? That seems a bit excessive.
Whoa! You know, if you're gonna steal cars, don't dress like a car thief.
You found my weakness. It's small knives.
Who are you?
Tell us a little bit about yourself, Mr. Parker. What does your father do, Peter?
Well, I never really knew my father. My parents left when I was very young.
Peter, someday you'll understand.
did you tell the boy about his father?
Dr. Connors, I'm Richard Parker's son.
If you want the truth about your parents, Peter, come and get it.
All right, so that should have been some of the trailer for The Amazing Spider-Man. And, of course, this is the story of geeky social outcast Peter Parker discovering that his parents, who left him at a young age, were involved in something at the Oscorp Corporation with Dr. Kirk Connors. Peter investigates and ends up being bitten by a genetically altered spider. Dough. He then develops super strength.
Did you say dough?
I said dough. I hate when that happens, when you're bitten by a spider and you're like, oh, not Mondays! So he develops super strength, sticky hands, and spider sense, of course. And due to a later tragedy, Peter then starts to use these powers to take down criminals, which leads to him becoming Spider-Man. At the same time, Peter is also developing a romantic relationship with Gwen Stacy, played by Emma Stone, whose father, Captain Stacy, Dennis Leary, is trying to take down Spider-Man. Also, Kirk Connors is having his own problems as he's tested his own serum on himself, which has led to his transformation into, you know, a giant lizard creature, Tuesday. Superpowered hijinks ensue in an effort to stop the lizard. Let's start with Abe. What do you think of The Amazing Spider-Man?
Wow, that was a long pause.
Yeah.
I thought that it was a good movie. I didn't think it was something that was mind-blowing. I wasn't really walking away from the theater thinking, wow, this has changed my life. This is like a great Marvel movie.
As most movies, you tend to rank on that scale.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. But no, it was something that I did enjoy it, but I just didn't really get as much satisfaction out of it. And I wonder if that's primarily because, the Spider-Man it's kind of going for like maybe a different theme or a different revenge theme. I don't know. But it also really didn't establish a lot of characters that I wanted to establish and relationships I didn't want or that I didn't feel were fully established, like the Uncle Ben, Peter Parker thing. That one was kind of... It didn't hit as well as it did with some of the Raimi films. And the character development of the main villain, I didn't feel as though that one was that great either. There were a lot of cool scenes with it. And then also, toward the end, it kind of... The redemption value of the main villain, I didn't feel was really there for what happens toward the end of the film. And it kind of just seemed like it was trying to put a lot of ideas together in a short amount of space, and so I don't know if it could have done it better, even though the movie is like, I don't know.
It's a little over two. It's 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Yeah, it's a long film, so it's, I don't know if it was just, maybe they wanted to really please a lot of the fans or what have you, but, you know, again, just as an overall basis, it was an okay film. I just wasn't really going to rush out and tell everybody, hey, you got to go see this.
Let's go to Jordan from Jersey.
I actually really enjoyed it. For me, I'm a huge Spider-Man fan, and I never really loved the Sam Raimi trilogy. I thought, as movies, they were fairly good. I didn't even hate Spider-Man 3 nearly as much as everybody else did.
Agreed.
But I really, really disliked Tobey Maguire's Peter Parker. I thought he totally missed the mark on the character. And yes, I understand it's an adaptation. It's not going to be exactly the same as the books I read, and that's fine. But the version he did portray isn't a version I want to watch on screen for any amount of time. So in that regard, I thought, you know, especially with Peter Parker, but in all the casting, I thought this movie was heads and tails above the others. I thought Spider-Man 2 is probably a better movie, but I'd say this is the one I would sooner watch again than any of the first three.
Jordan Grout.
I was not a fan. I did not find it exciting at all, actually. I didn't find the characters interesting, with the exception of Martin Sheen and Dennis Leary. I almost said Dennis Miller. That would have been awkward. I didn't feel that the characters resonated. I felt the romance was hollow. I thought the pacing was clunky. The film felt, for me, very long. It felt like Return of the King length. And by the end, the big action set piece, I just didn't care. I know people are complaining about the use of a crane in the end, and people are all upset about that, and I just didn't care. I just wanted the movie to end, and I was like, oh, crane, all right, moving on. It didn't give me, like, goosebumps the way, you know, the first three did. Even Spider-Man 3, like, there were moments where I thought, oh, yeah, Spider-Man, go, and none of that. I hated the design of the lizard. I felt that motivations of characters were so unclear, and things they did at the end were not established earlier and just shoehorned in. And sure, the special effects are better than Raimi's films, but I'll take his, you know, kind of clunky special effects any day over this movie, because I felt his is so much emotion, and the impact is far greater than Mark Webb's.
We're going to be all over the map on this one, because I think I'm right in between Abe and Jordan on this. I like the movie quite a bit, and certainly more some aspects more than others of it, but I enjoyed the movie overall, and I think it's about on par with the first Spider-Man film in terms of what it's trying to do. And so the difficult thing about this movie is that, well, it exists now. I mean, it's coming 10 years after the first Spider-Man, 5 years after Spider-Man 3, and it sticks very close. I mean, it's an origin story, and we've all seen that origin story, and so it's very difficult to be like, well, why does this movie need to happen? But separated from all of that, I think there's a lot of good stuff here, because I do think Andrew Garfield's quite good as Peter Parker and as Spider-Man, and I think Emma Stone's solid as Gwen Stacy, but they're that chemistry alone in that movie, like, I'd watch that movie just about these two interacting, because I just think it's really well handled, and I like the fact that the relationship, compared to, like, the Sam Raimi films, where it's essentially about that romantic core and has other stuff on the side, this movie, it falls into more of a subplot category that I think works. I think there's a subtlety to how it's handled that I felt worked well for the film. I thought it was pretty strong. I do think it has issues with its story, with kind of, I guess, motivations. Like, you have Peter Parker initially starts out, I mean, the movie is basically being told the untold story, but nothing's really expanded on in that aspect. Like, we want to learn more about Peter Parker's parents. Like, Peter Parker wants to learn more about his parents, but then the movie kind of drops that entirely after he becomes Spider-Man. And given that the movie advertised itself so heavily on being the untold story of Peter Parker, you figured, I think I'd want to learn about the untold story of Peter Parker.
Yeah, maybe there's like an extra untold part relating to Oscorp, which, again, you don't really get a whole lot of. You just figure out a math formula, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, it seems very clear that there's like a 3-hour version of this movie, and a lot of that was cut out for either pacing or, you know, let's put this into the sequel. But given that the movie was, you know, so heavily touted as being about the untold story, I wanted to see more of that stuff and not, you know, stuff I've already seen in the Sam Raimi movies. Where the movie also falters is the villain category, where in the first film you have like Willem Dafoe as Green Goblin, who's an amazing Norman Osborn.
Yes.
Costume aside, Willem Dafoe's really good in that movie. And Alfred Molina's, like, really good as Doc Ock in the second Spider-Man film. Not even, I don't know about Venom, but I'd argue for what little he has to do, Sandman, he worked kind of well in Spider-Man 3. This one...
Yeah, is, Grace did a fine job in that.
This one, I mean, Risa Fons is a good actor. I like him, but he doesn't get much to do, like, after the first couple scenes with him. Like, you see him meet Peter Parker, and that's fun and stuff. But when he becomes, like, the Lizard, his motivations are so, like, silly. It's right. Like, why is he... he becomes a lizard, and so his solution is to put people into lizards. Like, I don't know why he wants to do this. I don't know what I'm supposed to... Like, it's just...
Yeah. And the other thing about that, too, is, like, there's a point in the movie where he's kind of ambivalent about what to do, because he's getting pressure from two different sides, like, one from Oscorp and then one from, I guess, his personal standpoint about what to do with this quote-unquote, new serum that he's developed. And then all of a sudden he starts just, you know, juicing up on all of it all the time. And I wasn't really sure about why he was doing that at all. I mean, he seems to have, like, these internal dialogues within himself, which I guess are soliloquies, but it's just, you know, it's just... I wasn't sure about where his character was getting all this. What's the fuel for all this? Why does he want to all of a sudden unleash this upon New York?
He's trying to rid the world of weaknesses, I think, his explanation for it in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Did he say that? Because I thought that, like, at no point, like, he indicated that he felt humanity was inadequate.
Well, I mean, he says it in the conversation before he comes, the Lizard, and it seems to be when he's having that inner monologue where he kind of decides that, oh, humanity is the weakness, and it's the Lizard who's the strength. But I don't know if it's said in that many words. It's more just implied.
Yeah, and I wish that stuff was kind of, you know, I wish it had more of a reason to resonate with me, where I'm like, I care about this the villain's plot, because he's, you know, trying to basically take over the world, as all villains want, or these kind of villains want to do. I don't think it registered full. Now, with all that said, like, my kind of thoughts on the movie, I do like it overall. Villain problems and, like, weird untold story, not told issue
aside.
It's not aside. I like the cast a lot. I thought Dennis Leary was pretty effective, actually, as Captain Stacy. I thought more so than I initially thought he would. And I really liked Uncle Ben and Aunt May. I liked Martin Sheen and Sally Field. Having watched the other Spider-Man films recently, I would say Cliff Robertson as Uncle Ben, that relationship's very strong. But I think the Martin Sheen, Andrew Garfield dynamic, I think that works well for the little time, and both these films have a little time to spend with Uncle Ben, but that aspect I think works well, and I think it's, I mean, I was going in, I wasn't worried about Martin Sheen and Sally Field not being able to pull off being Uncle Ben and Aunt May, because they're great actors, so that worked for me. And the Spidey stuff is cool, like seeing Spider-Man swing around town. I never not want to see that. Like, it's awesome and it looks great, and I saw this movie and big 3D and IMAX, and it looked really good in that format. It was well shot in 3D for those big action sequences. I would say, the third act action sequence, it's mainly because the lizard's just not threatening to me, just the design of the lizard in this movie, the CG work on him. Like, it looks fine in terms of it's there in the scene, but, like,
it looks like a Koopa from Mario.
I actually like the design of the lizard. He's pretty, like, strong, bulky, and people were saying that he kind of looks like Killer Croc a little bit more than he does the lizard, which I guess from, like, the jawline and stuff. But I like the design of the lizard enough that I was with that. But again, just the aspect of, okay, now I'm going to unleash this upon the city, and I will use Oscorp as like, the tower to do it. Yeah, it was kind of something that you've seen in all of the trailers, especially that now that they've put out, like, 4-minute trailers and stuff like that. It just... I think that some of the suspense was taken away, so I was kind of bummed out about that.
On the design front, I mean, I know a lot of people complain that, oh, the lizard looks like Killer Croc, or the lizard doesn't have a snout, but what most people don't remember is that he didn't get the snout till later. I mean, the original lizard design, which I just sent you through Skype, looks just like the one in this movie, except he's a little smaller, he's not quite as bulky, but the snout was a later addition, so this is actually a lot closer to what the lizard looks like than people realize.
Yeah, and even with that said, though, I mean, for being the main antagonist of this film, I just didn't feel threatened by him, which, I mean, it's, regardless of how true the comic is, that does make a difference to me. But then again, Green Goblin's a terrible costume, so, I mean, it's, how much do we get to take away from these villain things?
Right, right.
And all these villains in Spider-Man. Now, I'll give credit to Marvel for, having using their villains. Like, how many times have we seen Lex Luthor in a Superman film? But Spider-Man, we've got, all these different villains, and I think that's really cool. Like, we get to see all these different characters come to life. And I'm also a big lizard fan in general, so that it's a mix of... I was kind of upset that I wasn't more into what the lizard's whole plan was, or even, like, his... Even his human side, like Abe was saying, his kind of, bringing... How that character gets resolved, it didn't mean much to me. Compared to someone like Doc Ock or something like that. But...
Yeah, I thought about that actually too. I made that comparison, and I know that Jordan from Jersey, I think that you were really good in that you didn't go back and watch the Raimi films, right?
Right. I kind of wanted to. I figured everyone else is going back and watching them for the most part, and I wanted to kind of give myself a different perspective.
Yeah.
Plus, like I said, I don't really like them very much, so
yeah,
it was no big loss for me.
Yeah, I gotta applaud you for that, because almost immediately I just went back and started watching the other Spider-Man films. But yeah, there's a redemption value in Doc Ock in Spider-Man 2 that I found effective, and I found that to be, the way that his character plays out in that film, I found that to be better than the lizard in this film. And I think that they were trying to go for maybe that same kind of story arc of I'm shaking off the angel dust now. Oh, this is what I'm doing? No, I can't do that. You know what I mean? So it's kind of just, it wasn't as rewarding as I thought it could have been.
Yeah, and I never understood if Connors was a decent man, just a victim of fate, or like a really menacing, like vindictive person who's just amplified by the serum. Because when he... goes back to his human form, he's still looking to hurt humanity. But then at the very end, he becomes good. And he the very last scene, like the post-credit scene, like he's standing up for Peter Parker. And I thought, well, what do you want? And I felt like the movie didn't understand that either. So
I mean, I don't think it's like Jekyll Hyde. I don't think when Kirk Connors is not the lizard that he's in this movie, in this version of Kirk Connors, I don't think it had the confusion of him being like an innocent guy when he's not the lizard, but a monster when he is the lizard after he uses the serum. I think before he used the serum, yeah, he's a good guy. He's a scientist. He wants to do, you know, he wants to create a cure so he can grow his arm back and what have you. But after he becomes the villain, he's more like a drug addict at that point, where he wants more of that. He wants to be in control. He wants to have everything he needs, and it kind of warps his mind into like, everybody should be like this. Everyone needs to be perfect. I don't think the movie was confused in that aspect.
And even, well, before he becomes the lizard, I still felt like, oh, this is an ominous, shadowy character.
Did you get that vibe? He seemed like a nice guy.
I felt like there's always like something else there.
You think, whereas Greasy Fox as the bad guy and the Little Nicky too much to be able to separate them out?
Yeah, exactly. That and the 5-year engagement. Yeah, you got it. Whereas Connors in Raimi's films, I thought, hey, yeah, there's no question. He's just a really decent guy who eventually is going to get screwed over by some serum he's going to test on himself.
Well, you know what? Dylan Baker was evil in Trick or Treat. Let's move on from the lizard and let's go to the other characters. Like what?
Okay, the characters of Parker and not Mary Jane. Gwen Stacy. I just felt they were flat. Like, especially Gwen Stacy.
You didn't like Emma Stone as Gwen Stacy.
I thought the acting was fine. Thought the acting was A-okay. I thought the characters that were written were underdeveloped. But besides wanting Peter Parker, I didn't feel like there was much more there to the character. Whereas in Raimi's films, yeah, even in the first one, like, I feel they're fully developed. You know what each character wants, and it's clear, and there's no confusion. And in this one, I just thought they were just boring. And, thankfully, the film didn't have her become the damsel in distress at the end.
I give credit to that, actually, because she doesn't become what she's not on the
top. That's a nice touch.
Yeah,
but
kind of style.
Yeah.
I just didn't feel like there was a whole lot there.
Well, okay, Jordan, you didn't like Tobey Maguire. Jordan from Jersey, you didn't like Tobey Maguire in the original trilogy. What do you think about Andrew Garfield here as Peter Parker?
I think, for me, he perfectly hits the mark of what I want from a Peter Parker and a Spider-Man. He's got, you know, the Tobey Maguire version had kind of two modes. He had mopey and he had shy, goofy smile. And that's fine if that's what you're looking for, but this is a Peter Parker who felt much more real. The Tobey Maguire version felt somewhat close to like the original 1962 or 64, I forget the year, version of Peter Parker, that, you know, the Amazing Fantasy 15, the wallflower, nobody Peter Parker. But this one feels much closer to the Peter Parker that's been written in the last 50 years since that. He feels he can be mopey when there's a reason for him to be mopey, but he can be funny, he can be whatever he needs to be. He's a normal guy. He's an outcast, but he's still the everyman, which is kind of what Stan Lee has always gone back to as the main, the best quality of Spider-Man, that, you know, beneath the mask, it could be anybody. And Peter Parker needs to feel like anybody. He's still, you know, he's still a science genius, he's still smart and everything, but he still feels like a normal guy. He doesn't just feel like, you know, some milquetoast nobody Tobey Maguire's version felt like in the first trilogy.
It's kind of weird because I like Andrew Garfield as the role of Peter Parker. I think that he kind of assumes the role the way that I assume Peter Parker to be, which is tall, lanky, you know, bushy-haired, quiet. But I think what the character did for me, it really kind of, it made Peter kind of angsty, and it made him kind of a jerk sometimes, because this is part where Flash is trying to console him. I don't know how the whole entire school find out that Uncle Ben died, but
it's in the Daily Bugle.
It's front page of the Daily Bugle.
Everyone reads the Daily Bugle, it seems.
But, Flash is trying to console him, and then he just throws him into the lockers and doesn't even apologize for that. And I found that to be a dick move on...
Well, I mean, that's like the day after his uncle died.
It's understandable, but at the same time, like, I think that it was just one of those things where I didn't see that coming from Flash Thompson either. Flash Thompson.
And it shows up at the funeral at the end.
Flash Thompson does?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize that. But, I mean...
You don't see him. I think Gwen just mentions that he was there.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so, you know, I think that Andrew Garfield fits the role, but I kind of again, I don't really like to compare the two, but it's just I found Tobey Maguire to be more comic-y, like comic booky, in the way that he's portrayed. And I think that you kind of hit it there, Jordan from Jersey. It's just that Tobey Maguire kind of does that whole entire retro Spider-Man where he's quirky and he's kind of like lighthearted, goofy. So maybe that's just what the
it's fitting of like a. Of kind of Sam Raimi's handle on those kind of films, where because I would say that yes, the earlier Spider-Man films feel like they feel more comic booky, and this film feels more set in a realistic world, despite the fact that there are giant lizards and spider powers and what have you. But it's easy enough for me to disassociate the two just because they feel like different films to me. It doesn't feel like Mark Webb is completely riffing off of the. It feels like I can easily separate the two. So I mean that issue. I mean I don't want to try to compare the two if I don't have to. So I'm just going to try to stick away from it because I just in general I like Andrew Garfield in this movie and I liked his portrayal of Peter Parker, which was I think it was different from Tobey Maguire. So it didn't feel like it was just rehashing.
That's true.
The same movie again because I want to think of this as a reboot and not a remake of that film, and that's. It comes down to how difficult it is, how difficult of a position Spider-Man is in, if this movie is in, compared to having that previous franchise so early on. But,
right.
I think
Did you know he's 29, by the way?
Yeah, I'm aware that he's quite old, and he...
I was not aware of that until after I saw the movie.
So you were convinced that he was a high school student, then?
He looked like a somewhat tall high school student, but yeah. I mean that is my one super fanboy nitpick is Peter Parker's 5'8" and he's much too tall to be Peter Parker. But aside from that,
well, Hugh Jackman is pretty tall for Wolverine.
Yeah.
Oh, he's much too tall for Wolverine. But that thing didn't really bother me. I just did notice like in the locker scene you mentioned earlier where he's standing right next to Flash Thompson. It's like wait a second, they're both the same height. There's a problem here. You know, this is a tall kid, but he still looks very young. He doesn't look 29 in my opinion anyway. Not in the movie.
Because again, I do like this movie, and I've seen it twice so far, and I don't know if I'd see it in theaters again, but I'll see it when I'll get the Blu-ray.
Well, here's a question: Jordan from Jersey and Jordan from Grout, have you guys seen it multiple times?
Nope.
I've only seen it once.
Okay, Aaron, does it get better as you see it the second time?
It sticks about the same. Although the second time I saw it on the huge IMAX screen, and then that's when I realized that wow, they shot the film. It's not shot on IMAX, but it's shot so it takes up the full frame during the climax, which impressed me quite a bit because it's like wow, this is very large Spider-Man I'm seeing going around in 3D right now. But what I've been trying to kind of rack in my mind of like how to kind of think of this movie is. Like, what separates it? Because it's an origin story, and origin superhero films all generally run the same and just need that little something to make it different. And, like, Iron Man has, like, Robert Downey Jr. that makes it stand out from other origin stories because he's a great performance in that movie. And something like, I mean, Superman's the template for all these movies, but, like, these movies need something that make it stand out. And honestly, as much as I like Spider-Man, it doesn't have that extra something that makes it stand out for me. Where like I think it's a good film, but I don't think it reached that upper level of like the first origin movie that like really like set me up for all the sequels. Like I'll be happy to see sequels, and superhero sequels generally tend to be better just because they get all that origin stuff out of the way. But this one, while good and while I enjoyed and would recommend it to people, I don't think it got to that level of being something like. Completely different from other origin story movies.
Yeah, I think I'm there with you too, which is just to say that, yeah, it's a good movie. I liked it. But it just, yeah, it didn't leave me thinking, damn, I gotta wait for them to pull out a Joker, like in Batman Begins, something like that.
Which I don't think was aided by the whatever was going on in the post-credit sequence that, like, you know, obviously sets up a sequel, but it's like, what's happening here? Like, Jordan from Jersey, what do you think of the without spoiling what it is, were you like, what were your thoughts on the post-credit?
On the mid-credit sequence, I thought it was incredibly vague, which can be a negative, but it can also be a positive in that now you have people debating, you know, who's the character he's talking to, and I alluded to who a lot of people think it could be and who I think it could be and could be a good idea for the next film. I guess in the way that you were I don't want to say complaining as a negative, but how you were pointing out that they kind of dropped the thread of his parents' story midway through the movie. This just affirming that there's a lot more to that story, and it'll be coming in the subsequent two films. Just kind of giving you that tease of that. So in that way, I think it worked for me. And it's if they keep that villain, if it is indeed a villain, vague enough, then you have a lot of ways you can go with it in the next two movies without committing to anything right now.
Yeah, and that's fine. And, like, I'm not necessarily mad at the well, I'm more mad at the way the movie was marketed when it comes to the whole parent stuff, just because the tagline's literally the untold story, yet this movie sticks so closely to being that's, I mean, not a remake, but that same story of how Peter Parker became Spider-Man and doesn't offer much new in the way of a plot. Like, you still have, you know, Peter Parker becomes Spider-Man, he looks for criminals, and then there's a big bad villain at the end with, you know, vague...
But aside from the part that Peter Parker becomes Spider-Man, every other part of your sentence applies to every other Spider-Man movie anyway. He goes out and fights crime and then fights a big villain.
So it's the told story. It's not the untold story.
But I'm saying that's for any Spider-Man movie, not just an origin story. Yeah. Aside from Peter becomes Spider-Man part, the rest of it is all different. You know, right down to Gwen versus Mary Jane, who, while I thought Kristen Dunst did a good job as Mary Jane, you know, in a fight between which character do I want to see, Gwen Stacy wins every day, especially when portrayed that well and looking like she stepped right off, you know, the Romita Page by Emma Stone there. That for me, their relationship is what set this apart from, say, the, Spider-Man 1.
You want to, I don't know.
Want to what?
I don't know. Just, I don't know, or we could do something else, or we could, if you don't, I mean, like, we could.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, either one.
Really?
Sure.
Okay. All right. Good. Sounds good. Okay. Still my heart. I can't right now.
Yeah.
I'm so busy right now.
Me too. Oh.
But maybe
yeah, just, you know,
some other
time.
Okay. All right.
And yeah, I would agree with that. And so Jordan Grout, you think the relationship aspect fell flat?
Yep.
I thought it was like the best part of the movie.
They're flirting in the hallway, all that sequence, like none of that did anything for you.
The gold was great.
I felt there was barely a build up to the relationship. It's like, oh, they like one another. Okay, they get together early on, and that's it. That's it. I was like, oh, okay, there's really not much more to it. And it could have worked. But I felt it failed in the execution.
I think I'm kind of with Jordan on that. I mean, Jordan Grant on that.
And with both characters, I just didn't feel there was an arc. To either of them, I felt they were the same character they were at the end than they as they were at the beginning.
Well, I think that there's more of an arc, but I feel as though barely
agree. Yeah, barely.
I like the portrayals of them. Definitely, that's something, and I like the relationship as it goes, but it is kind of weird how quickly it moved in the beginning of, you know, they just meet on the playground after Flash is, like, beating up Peter for him stopping a fight. And then it's not creepy to her that he climbs 20 stories and is, like, basically stalking her at her at her window.
Or that he's, you know, he has her on his computer. Or that
That was the debate team. That was explained.
The first thing he sees her, like, walks outside, he pulls up his camera, he takes a picture of her.
At least...
And she did invite him to her house. It's not like he just showed up.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, it's
a climbing fire.
There's even a crucial deleted scene that I saw early on that has him.
Yeah, right.
From Rescue Me, another, you know, which is funny because Dennis Leary was in the movie.
Yeah. I felt Dennis Leary had a bigger arc than Peter Parker or Mary, I keep saying Mary Jane, Gwen Stacy.
Yeah, he was great.
Yeah. Another little nitpick, it's really minor. I didn't get the sense of New York like you do in the first three films. Like, and
really not in the crane scene?
I felt like you really got, you know, the feeling that it was a New York setting and the atmosphere. In this film, I felt it could have been just any city, USA.
I don't know about that. I mean, I see where you're coming from on that, but it wasn't something that, like, caused an issue with me.
I mean, it didn't bother me while watching it, but afterwards, upon reflection, I was like, well, I didn't feel like New York. Like, you get the sense in Raimi's films.
You know, something that is not exactly along those lines, but kind of in retrospect when I was thinking about it, I was thinking to myself, I kind of liked how the other ones moved away from high school and Peter going to college and stuff like that, so that it advances the science so that he could be like, yeah, I've been studying science on a college level. Whereas this one, he asks Gwen Stacy, do you know how to make a serum? And she knows how to make a serum. And I'm thinking to myself, AP Bio doesn't let you do that.
She works at Oscorp, which is super, I mean, it has the Oscorp animal tree. Like, there's like super,
that's right.
There's super awesome technology in that building where you can easily go in and say, I need lizard antidote. Here we go, and it's made.
Plus, she's number one in her class.
Exactly.
And he's number two. You know,
she's no slouch.
She's no slacker.
She's no Mary Jane working up the diner.
The diner. Yes, Enrique, I hear you.
I long to fix myself. I want to create a world without weakness. Anyone care to venture a guess just how? Yes.
Stem cells.
Promising. But the solution I'm thinking of is more radical. No one?
Cross-species genetics. Person gets Parkinson's when the brain cells that produce dopamine start to disappear. But a zebrafish has the ability to regenerate cells on command. If you could somehow give this ability to the woman you're talking about, that's that. She's curing herself.
Yeah, you just have to look past the gills on her neck.
And you are?
He's one of Midtown Science's best and brightest.
Really?
He's second in his class.
Oh.
Second?
Yeah.
You sure about that?
I'm pretty sure.
Going back to Jordan's comment about New York, it reminded me of something that I really disliked in the first trilogy and I really disliked in this movie, and that is, can we please, please never have another scene where a bunch of New Yorkers stand in front of a flag and then decide to help Peter Parker, because I don't care. And it happens in all four movies.
It does.
You mess,
like, it's just, like, it's always
all of us.
You mess with one of us, you mess with all of us.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, A, I've been to New York. That's never going to happen. But B, it's so hokey and so goofy, and so it kind of fits in the Raimi films because that's the tone they take. But it certainly didn't fit here. And it would have even been better if they just cut out the shot of the American flag. Like, we get it.
I see.
You know,
that's something I didn't know. Like, I saw this, I saw this movie with Scott Mendelson, actually. And, like, we both, like, because we were both talking about Spider-Man on the Spider-Man commentary the other day. And we're like, well, there's that scene. And it, like, literally, like, holds on the flag for just enough time before freaking...
Oh, and you guys mentioned
it is
the New York setting, too. You and Scott mentioned that as well. Aaron, you and Scott discussed the New York setting as well, I believe, in your Spider-Man commentary, briefly, about how authentic it looked. And I feel that there's two types of New Yorks in films. One, Spider-Man, which feels authentic, and then the X-Men New York, which doesn't feel like it at all.
What is that?
It's an upstate New York. It's not in Manhattan.
X-Men's never downtown. Like, whatever.
Yeah, New York is a big state with a lot of nothing. I mean, no offense to it, but it's just a lot of fields and forests and stuff for the rest of it that's not New York City.
So I feel like Spider-Man just... it's a minor nitpick, so let's move on.
Okay, the action stuff in this movie. Did we like the action? Like, I like the... There's, like, a whole fight in the school that I really enjoyed, actually. I thought it was different.
I like the kid.
I'm going to throw you out the window now.
Yes, I'm going to throw you out the window now. Like, even with the lizard... And, I mean, that's a scene where, actually, I found the lizard to be threatening. Like, I thought that was a really cool, like, whole action sequence.
You know, the sequence that I liked the most was where he's actually spinning the web in the sewers, and he's just...
That was fantastic.
Chilling, yeah. He's just chilling, like, doing exactly everything... Like a spider would.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if I've ever seen that in the comics. I mean, granted, I haven't read every single Spider-Man comic, but that was a really inventive, cool thing for them to add.
Webs to detect where people would be, where an enemy would be coming from.
And, you know, there was a nice sequence there of, like, you know, going underwater and stuff. And I actually enjoyed that one a lot. I think that's, like, the best action sequence in the film. I like the school one, but at the same time, I was thinking to myself, man, that's a lot of damage to the school. Taxpayers are going to have to pay a lot.
Yeah, Midtown Science High is has seen better days.
Yeah,
that's the reason to hate an action sequence, because of the property damage.
It's legit.
That's why people hate Bad Boys too. It's like, damn it, they're gonna have to pay for a lot of stuff after this freeway.
It's coming right out of my taxes.
As a banker, it's tough.
I really liked. I also saw it in IMAX 3D, like Aaron, and I gotta say, in that crane scene, which I've already said I didn't like, but in the actual action part of it, when he's swinging, the 3D combined with the IMAX, every time he was hitting the apex of those arcs, my stomach was dropping. I thought that was an actually absolutely fantastic effect.
I agree.
Of the web swinging there.
I agree. It looked, and I'm also, you know, just as an aside, mechanical web shooters makes me so happy. I'm so
yeah. I appreciated that over the organics.
That was something that, for me, I mean, granted, I would have been just as happy with them recasting and doing Spider-Man 4. It wouldn't have bothered me. But since they are redoing it, I do like the fact that they're going back to all the things that the Raimi films got wrong. And I'm not saying that from a fanboy perspective, but the Raimi films tried to bring in a lot of subplots and a lot of things, like, for instance, Mary Jane getting thrown off the bridge, that they stole from other stories and did, I'll say wrong just for comics continuity, but wrong in the sense that you can't ever then revisit them and do them the right way, in the way that actually made sense and was emotionally affecting, like in the comics. Now, because they have gone back, that's at least one plus, that they can go back, they can do them in a way that actually works story-wise now. So I thought that was a plus, both with web shooters and with bringing Gwen in and, you know, not having Mary Jane this early, not aping the bridge scene already, that kind
of
stuff.
Yeah, so you're looking forward to seeing Emma Stone murdered in a future sequel of Spider-Man, I guess.
Well, I mean, really, and especially, I mean, I'll save this part for the spoilers, but the way the movie ends, you're really going to feel it, and so is Peter, when that eventually happens, because it's already his fault just from the way this movie ends.
Yeah, he deserves it, because he's an asshole. Good. I'm going to be cheering during that scene in the theater. Yeah, you deserve it, you dick.
In my notes, I have Flash Thompson, so I guess I've already explained my thoughts on Flash Thompson.
Good old Venom. Would you guys like to see that actor as Venom someday?
I honestly just don't care about Venom. I don't care about
his version of Venom is very different from the version of Venom that's existed elsewhere in the last 25 years of comics. It's a completely different type of character.
Do you like that version of Venom?
Oh, yeah, it's actually pretty cool, because... and this is comic book spoilers, but Flash Thompson, he's big Spider-Man fan. He eventually stops being a complete jerk, and he goes to kind of honor Spider-Man and do his part. He, you know, joins the army, goes to, I forget if it's Iraq or Afghanistan, and loses both his legs in an explosion and saving the rest of his team. And again, in his way of honoring Spider-Man and trying to live up to that, to his hero. And so when he comes back, he's now in a wheelchair, and he's given the Venom symbiote by... I believe S.H.I.E.L.D. or maybe the Avengers, I forget. But basically, he's given this symbiote with a lot of controls and a lot of checks to keep it from going out of control, and allowed to be kind of a secret agent. Kind of Bond meets Spider-Man in a way.
Okay, well, that sounds cool in the comics. I don't know if that ever happened in the movies, but if it was like a spinoff thing, I guess that could, you know, that's
right. The untold story of Venom.
That's the untold story I want to see. But, I mean, Spider-Man has such a... I mean, second to Batman, Spider-Man is, like, a great rogues gallery of villains. So, I mean, I just don't care that much about Venom compared to, like, other characters that I'd really like to see. Things like Mysterio, or even, like, a Kraven the Hunter, like, movie where, like, he's hunting Spider-Man throughout. Like, that'd be cool to me. Like, I think that'd be awesome.
Well, Aaron, if you figure that... I'm assuming that they save the whole Gwen and the Bridge thing for movie 3, which would mean Green Goblin for The Amazing Spider-Man 3. Who do you want to see? I mean, you asked me this question earlier, but of this giant rogues gallery that he has, who do you think is the good buffer villain in between Lizard and Green Goblin, if indeed that's how it works out?
Someone like Electro, or, I mean, I don't know how Vulture would factor in, but Vulture is, like, that's a neat idea for having a villain in there. Or, you, I mean, given how this movie ends and what it's trying to set up, I mean... The Spider Slayer stuff, that could be neat. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be cool, yeah.
Actually, Spider Slayer, given the Oscorp thing, like, we build crazy things, like, that'd actually be kind of neat to see in a movie. But,
right. Or Scorpion in particular.
Scorpion too, yeah, that'd be another one. I wouldn't want to see Rhino. I don't know.
It's just Jim Carrey.
I
don't think you have to worry about that, because I know the Spider-Man video game that just came out is supposedly in continuity with the movies, and they've been working with Sony, and that has Rhino, as an Oscorp. I believe it's tied into Oscorp, but so they've already shot that load, and you're not going to have to worry about him hopefully ever showing up in a movie outside of a cameo.
For some reason, every Spider-Man game apparently needs to have a Rhino villain. I don't know why, but everyone always has.
God, way up so he can run into a wall.
Exactly. You always beat him the same way. It's like, spin a web, jump ahead of him, and he runs to a wall, and he gets dizzy, and then you just beat the hell out of him. Like, I just don't care about the Rhino that much. Alright.
You know, if as long as they put J.K. Simmons back in the role of J. Jonah Jameson,
I'd be very happy with that. If, even though it's a reboot or what have you, if they keep J.K. Simmons...
He is so good in that role.
Yeah.
Let me just ask.
Yeah.
Jordan, number one, you're a big Spider-Man fan, obviously.
Yes.
And Aaron is. What about you, Abe?
I'm halvesies. I've never kept up with the comic books. I only started with the cartoon series back in, like, the 90s.
Spider-Morphin, Radio-Morphin, Spider-Morphin.
Yeah, that one. The electric guitar one.
So, do you feel that someone like myself, who never really got into the Spider-Man comics... It seems like a lot of people I've spoken with, those who really, really like the movie and are big fans of it, are a big fan of the comic. And those who don't like it aren't as well schooled in the comic books. Would you agree?
Because I've heard a lot of people that, you know, dislike the movie that are big fans of the Spider-Man comics.
I would say it depends on what era of the Spider-Man comics they were fans of, honestly.
Yeah, because I barely know anything about Spider-Man from the comics. I'm just going off, you know, the films and the few cartoons I saw when I was little.
Yeah.
Well, because as I was saying, kind of with, like, how Sam Raimi's films, they feel more like comic book films, and this film feels more, has a different kind of tone and style. I'm not going to say fucking dark and gritty. I think that's stupid. But it's set in a different kind of world than those films are, and I would, given that, I don't think that reading Spider-Man comics makes me one to like this movie or dislike this movie anymore. I think it's enough of a film and not like an adaptation of a comic book that, if you know what I'm trying to say,
right.
Oh, yeah. Works. Yeah, sure.
I think the only place where I would disagree with you, Aaron, is what I already said before about this being not just a closer representation of Peter Parker from the comics, but a character who I actually want to see on film. And so in that way, I do think it is close to the comics, and I do think that's a very important part of it for me, because when I read Spider-Man comics, and I know this is sacrilege for a lot of Spider-Man fans, yes, Spider-Man has a very big rogues gallery, and I don't really care for many of them. I would prefer a Spider-Man movie where he just fights a bunch of street thugs and hangs out a lot of time, because I enjoy the character of Peter Parker far more than I've ever cared about any of his villains. And so, for me, that's why I like this movie and why I like the Spider-Man comics. It's Peter Parker and the way he's portrayed, as opposed to any of the other ancillary stuff.
See, I see where you're coming from there. And that's kind of, I mean, something that I read about and heard about from Raimi and how he was constantly approaching those films despite what Sony wanted to do by shoving villains down his throat with 3 and eventually 4, I'd imagine, before that got scrapped, is that he specifically wanted to arc the 3 films that he had based on where Peter Parker is as a person and how those villains reflect his own person or his own sides. And that's something that...
So mopey?
Well, you can call him mopey all you want, but I mean, that's...
He starts mopey, then works up to mopey, and then ends mopey.
That's something I appreciated about how we had villains factor into those various films. But I do like the idea of, Spider-Man, as opposed to, like, Batman, where I really like seeing the various villain incarnations come onto screen, I do like seeing Peter Parker's story in these films, and him as a character and how he's progressing. So, yeah, it's not as... It's cool to see the various representatives of his rogues gallery, you know, come on screen. But at the same time, I do like... Yeah, I said come on screen. Yeah, it's, It is... Yeah, I like seeing the character of Peter Parker reflected throughout these films.
If they... Like I said before, if they ever make a Spider-Man movie where it's just him fighting random thugs, or even just a movie where it's Peter Parker and Gwen Stacy or Peter Parker and Mary Jane, and there's no Spider-Man whatsoever, I'd be equally as happy, if not more so, than the 4 Spider-Man movies they made so far, because... That's the part I really like.
It's a little confusing just because I know this movie was supposed to be, like, smaller budgeted and, you know, basically less of a thing than Spider-Man 3, which was, like, one of the most expensive movies ever made at the time. So that didn't quite happen because this movie still cost a ton of money and, you know, features giant special effects sequences in the climax.
Which look fantastic.
They look good. They do look good. But, like, I'm curious to see what the what the stripped down version of Spider-Man would have been, and if it would have been closer to something that you would have liked, like seeing just Spider-Man not necessarily fight a giant villain.
So just like a huge character piece?
Yeah, just like, basically a character film, yeah. That.
500 Days of Summer, but just the characters are named Peter Parker and Gwen Stacy. Which
they should
I
have
think
a Spider-Man fight Robert De Niro's character from The Fan. That I would see.
You call Cake Spider-Man.
Or Patton Oswalt's character from Big Fan.
No, yeah, Big Fan. Or to see both of those.
Which happens in New York, so that makes sense.
All right, so unless Jordan Grout has any more complaining to do about the film, I guess we can wrap up and whip our...
Ah, shut up. Shut up.
Why don't you come here and say that?
You dare.
So we have a scale for Out Now, Baron, and that generally goes from when... It revolves around when you go and see this movie. So the scale goes from IMAX, the theater, Dolby Theater, Netflix, HBO TV, or just kind of forget about it. So how do we start? Abe, where would you put it on that scale?
I'd say theater. I mean, it's definitely one of those things that... It's a visual spectacle, and you should see it in a large theater.
Jordan from Jersey.
I would say on a theoretical scale, I would go for theater. But on an actual literal scale, if you can see it in IMAX 3D, I thought that the IMAX 3D was very impressive. I think it's more of a movie worthy of regular theater, but it is kind of cool to experience it that way.
I agree with that. Jordan Graham.
Yeah, it is fun visually at parts. The 3D's effective. Yeah, theater, matinee.
All right, so get to some more Spider-Man talk because we're going to do a little bit of movie callback.
Callback.
Yeah. You need a new jingle for that.
We had one just then.
Yeah, you need a new one.
Well,
I'll record one. I'll send it your way tomorrow.
Send it into outnowpodcast@gmail.com.
You got it.
I challenge listeners to beat the one that Jordan Grout sends in as well. People just start sending us jingles and theme songs, and we'll see if we put it on the show. Okay, so movie callback is where we discuss a few films that kind of relate to the main feature of the week that we thought of either while we were watching it or, you know, in retrospect. So let's start with Jordan from Jersey. Did you have any other films that came to mind?
Well, I assume we're going to step aside from the first three Spider-Man movies because that's kind of obvious.
Yeah.
But I would say, especially because of how much I liked Emma Stone in this one, I would point towards Easy A because I thought she was fantastic in that one. And it's not exactly a similar character so much, but both are equally well acted by her.
Jordan Grout.
I, too, thought of Easy A, actually.
Which also has Sandman in it, oddly enough.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. He's really good in that movie, too. I also thought of Green Lantern, and this is much better than Green Lantern, but I felt both films had flat characters.
Is it better than Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance for you?
No.
Okay.
I enjoy Spirit of Vengeance. Yeah, that's it.
Abe?
It's kind of tough. I couldn't really think of any, actually, those callbacks. I mean, because it's a comic book movie, but it's, and aside from the other Spider-Man films, I couldn't think of any of the movies, like, even post watching it.
Alright.
Oh, I also thought of, sorry, I guess this is obvious, Batman Forever, whereas I feel this should have taken that route. Like, new director, new cast, but don't reboot it, just do part 3.
Hmm. I would go on the record and saying I would have been happy seeing...
I mean, part 4, sorry.
A continuation of the Spider-Man series as opposed to a complete fresh start of it. Not necessarily, even if it wasn't necessarily continuity with the original 3, just, like, going without having the origin story would have been that. Like Hulk, I guess. Like,
sure.
But yeah, the movies I thought of, like, Iron Man and Captain America just because of, I was trying to compare other origin films that, like, I liked but had, like, something extra to them that kind of made them superior origin story films.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of where I was at with that. So, yeah, that's movie call.
I'd also probably mention 500 Days of Summer. Same director. And another good romantic comedy film.
I would see that.
I would say that, yeah, too, just because I did like the relationship in Spider-Man, and I there were areas of Amazing Spider-Man where I could see why Sony was like, you know, this Mark Webb guy's got something. Like, I could see why that was happening.
And you know what? That, to answer your earlier question, there's another actor who could be a good Peter Parker, Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yeah, see, I thought that too. If he was like younger, or if the movie was cast as Spider-Man as old, as Peter Parker is older.
Hmm.
And Zooey Deschanel as Black Cat.
The best part about Zooey Deschanel is
I'm picturing this in my mind right now. It's like calm down. Maybe it's Kitty Pryde. Okay.
She only burgles really hipster stores, though.
Yeah. She's constantly burgling
old record shops
and Urban Outfitters.
She steals diamonds, ironically.
After asking Siri.
What about Jamie Bell? Is that his name?
Jamie Bell.
Yeah, I think he's good.
Where do I know that name from?
Billy Elliot, King Kong, Jumper.
Tintin.
Ah, that guy, yeah.
You remember it from Tintin, right?
Tintin, yeah. I'd watch the Jamie Bell, Joseph Gordon-Levitt dance fight. That'd be charming. Big one could be Eddie Brock. Okay, so let's move on. Let's get to the box office. And box office, the movie opened on Tuesday. We're recording on a Saturday, so we don't have, final tallies for box office, but we do have kind of where Spider-Man's at right now. So with that said, Abe, do you remember what you predicted last week for the whole 6 day total?
I said 112 for 6 days.
Okay, and Jordan...
I forgot what I said.
You said 117. Jose said 110. I said 130. So far, it's made 95, 96 million total in its first 4 days, up to Friday. Up to Friday it made that, or what is it?
Yeah. Up to Friday.
Up to Friday. Okay, so it looks like it's coming to 135, 140 for the weekend. So I guess I won. But
and highest Tuesday opening ever. Not that it had any competition in that particular box office.
There was some competition, but nothing substantial. Nothing.
What's the last movie that came out on a Tuesday? I thought it came out on Wednesday, and I was surprised when I was looking to buy tickets, and they came out the day before.
It's whatever Christmas release was on a Tuesday.
Might have been. Did War Horse come out on Tuesday? Did that break records?
Jingle All the Way. Christmas with the Clumps.
Christmas with the Clumps. I watched that movie.
Saving Christmas or
the Hail and Kumar 3D.
That came out on Thanksgiving.
That's true.
Okay, The Omen came out on
2006.
On 666. That's why they went for that. Ollie was the movie that came out on Christmas. That's what I was trying to think. And Alien vs. Predator Requiem came out on a Tuesday.
That's true, because I saw it on Christmas.
And Transformers came out. The first Transformers came out on a Tuesday.
I thought you were going to say it came out at Christmas. I was like, really?
No, yeah, Transformers came out on a Tuesday in July. Yeah, which makes sense because it was a July 4th. It was July 3rd on the Tuesday, which is why it came out on Tuesday, posted actual July 4th day.
Gotcha.
Is this what I think it is?
I think it might be time.
I think it's time for some games.
It is game time, and Jordan Grout and Abe, I think you might be pretty happy because I have more celebrity tweets.
I'm excited, even though I think I'm going to lose.
Okay, so this game is pretty simple, guys. I'm going to read a series of tweets from celebrities, which are completely not made up. And you have to just guess who's tweeted this. I mean, it seems really easy to me. Jordans, you get the idea of this game?
I'm lost. Yes.
Very simple.
Typical Jordan.
There's only two rules that I have. You cannot ask me questions about these tweets, and I'm going to rattle them off pretty quickly. So you need to move on with these. So, okay, here's the first one. I'm telling you.
Okay, just don't rush me, all right?
I'm going to move pretty quickly here, so you just,
Okay, just don't rush me.
I won't rush you. Okay. I'll rush Limbaugh. it's terrible. Yeah. Terrible joke.
Wait, what does this have to do with OxyContin?
Okay, so here we go. Here's the first tweet. It's really simple. Okay. I loved Spider-Man since I was a child, and it was a thrill to put on the tights.
Andrew Garfield.
Yeah, that's easy, right? Okay. That's good. Okay. The difference is that Mary Jane is in love with Spider-Man. Gwen Stacy loves Peter Parker.
Emma Stone. Okay. Right. Yeah, Jordan Gilbert and I are on a roll.
Not much of a stretch. I've done cops and firemen before.
Dennis Leary.
Go to hell. He's on Twitter.
Okay. All right. At the real Dennis Leary.
Okay. I would have loved to play Parker. Mark is a good friend, and I love doing 500 Days, but I'm busy these days.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
So Zoe Deschanel, actually.
Ah!
I should have hashtag new girl was on the end. Oh. I should have read that part.
She could play May Parker. So that would work.
Okay, no goofy masks here. Just a bunch of green dots on my face and CGI to get me extra scaly.
Reese Fons.
Seth MacFarlane.
So Sally Field, actually. Sally Field put that to it.
Yeah, a lot of people were complaining before this movie came out that she wasn't old enough. I've got news for them. She's old.
I was thinking of how long Mrs. Doubtfire was to
Okay. Yeah, because she looked about 5 minutes.
It's over 20 years ago now, or 20 years ago now.
She looks like the way she does in Forrest Gump, except those are her real wrinkles now.
Sally Field looks like the Crypt Keeper.
The Crypt Keeper. Okay. I'm happy with what they did, and I hope the studio doesn't break their spirit by forcing stuff into Mark's next movie, next Spider-Man movies.
Sam Raimi,
yeah. Okay. Hashtag screw Sony on the end of this. Don't tell anybody, but I took some cues from Aliens and Titanic and just meshed them together.
James Franco.
The guy who did the score, whose name, Jack something, John something?
Yeah, James Horner.
He's on Twitter for some reason.
James Horner.
Classic Horner.
Classic.
Yeah. Okay. Here's the next one. Hey, Spider-Man, keep your goddamn mask on, you moron.
Tobey Maguire.
Judge Dredd.
It was James Earl Jones, actually.
Oh! Makes sense.
That'd be awesome. At the real Judge Dredd.
I couldn't think of Carl Urban's name off the top of my head.
Better joke. Anyway, keep it online with these completely real tweets. Okay.
Completely real.
I thought I already saw this movie in 2002 when I was also relevant.
Tobey Maguire.
Steve Limp Bizkit.
George W. Bush.
Oh. Mission accomplished.
Boom. Okay, here we go. Next one. C. Thomas Howell, freaking Soul Man is in Amazing Spider-Man? I didn't get a call. That was Ralph Macchio. Karate Kid. Who's...
That could have been anybody. Corey Feldman.
Here's the next one. Here we go. While I disagree with the principles behind this film, I really enjoyed the emotional complexity of Garfield, the chemistry of Stone, and the use of wonderful special effects that seemed like a commentary on technology and youth culture.
Sounds like more than 140 characters.
It was long.
Dame Judi Dench.
It was a tweet long.
Dame Kardashian.
Dench is Jordan Gilbert's answer.
It was Suri Cruz, actually.
Suri Cruz! Oh, she's tweeting now.
She's very insightful.
She is. She's quite
precocious.
She's precocious. Yeah. That's what they say. Precocious Suri Cruz.
She's really been eating her placenta.
Okay. I saw Katy Perry come at me in 3D instead. That was Bill Clinton.
Here's the next one.
I hated Spider-Man so much I wanted to shoot webs in my own eyes.
Jordan Grout.
So Stevie Wonder said that one.
Stevie Wonder.
I went and saw Magic Mike instead. So Hillary Clinton. I guess they didn't see the movie together.
Oh, I thought you said Bill Plimpton before.
I did say Bill Clinton before.
I thought you said Plimpton.
Oh, that'd be weird. Okay, last one. Spider-Man was decent, but Gwen Stacy made me want to go all Kraven the Hunter on Emma Stone.
Jim Carrey.
Jeffrey Rush. It's a weird one. It's on Twitter.
Wow.
I know. It's a bold tweet from Jeffrey Rush. That's how you play so many tweets.
Yeah! I should insert like some tweeting noise. Tweet!
Yeah, it'd be good. All right. Let's get to what we're going to talk about next week on the show. We're going to do, it's going to be pretty hectic next week because I'm going to be at Comic-Con. But I should be back Sunday. Night, I guess, to do it. So we don't really want to talk about Ice Age 4. So I think we're going to talk about a lot of the indie movies that have come out, the limited release movies and art house films that have come out recently, which we've done before on a couple podcasts like that. And I think Beast of the Southern Wild is going to be a big one in there, and like the new Woody Allen movie, To Roam with Love, and there's like several Mark Duplass movies that have come out.
Your sister,
Safety Not Guaranteed.
Yeah.
Like
That's My Boy.
That's My Boy. All those indie movies. So yeah, I think that's kind of our plan for next week. So yeah, it's kind of more looser in terms of the main film reviews. But yeah, Beast of the Southern Wild, I think, is one that we a lot of us want to talk about. But
I got to see that.
Yeah. So yeah, no real box office plan this week. Ice Age will probably take it.
I think it would be Ice Age.
Ice Age.
Yeah.
Ice
Age has become the new Land Before Time series, in my opinion. They're just going to keep making them.
Sad first.
And then there's 19 sequels to make up for it.
Sarah is apparently a lot nicer.
I hate those Ice Age films.
Not too big of a fan either. I like them more than Madagascar movies.
Isn't Dennis Leary also in those?
He is. He's going to have a good 2 weeks.
Oh, that's right. He's a super tooth.
Yeah.
Actually, I think I have to see Ice Age 4. I have a press screening for it. Oh. So that means I have to read about on Wikipedia what happened in Ice Age 3. I'm pretty sure.
Probably a lot of dinosaurs and ice.
Yeah, they probably made jokes and John Leguizamo slurred.
Well, that's a stretch.
Yeah.
That's a stretch, making jokes.
Yeah. But,
all right.
I say...
It had the cadence of a joke.
Yeah.
Ice Age is to kids' films what Resident Evil is to action films.
I can very much see that, because what's the other one?
Underworld.
Madagascar and Underworld are the same.
Damn.
Yeah.
And I are on the same thought on this one.
The werewolves in both look terrible.
They're popular for some reason, but I don't know anyone else that likes. Well, I know a lot of people that like them. I just don't care.
You just don't speak to those people.
Yeah, so I guess we might do a little spoiler-y stuff here, but I'm going to wrap it up for now. Let's say that's going to do it this week for Out Now with Aaron and Abe. You can find more of my personal work at thecodeofzeke.com, where you can find all my written movie reviews, as well as at whysoblue.com, where you can find my reviews there, as well as Blu-ray reviews and other reviews from people that are good on that site. You can also find me on Twitter at twitter.com/AaronsPS3. Abe?
You can find more fun stuff at walrusmoose.blogspot.com and twitter.com/walrusmoose.
Jordan from Jersey.
You can follow me at Jordan from Jersey. That's at Jordan FRM Jersey. Or listen to me on the Walking Dead TV podcast or the Legion of Dudes podcast at hhwlod.com.
Jordan Grout.
You can go to damndirtyblog.blogspot.com or Twitter at AmsterdamChap.
Okay. And of course, you can find all our other shows, all our other episodes about now, Farron and Abe, on iTunes. At hhwlod.com, which is the podcast network that hosts our show, as well as the show that Jordan from Jersey is also a co-host on. I think I'm actually going to be guesting.
Synergy.
Yeah. I think I might be guesting on both of those, on Legion of Dudes and Walking Dead TV podcast in the near future. So
we certainly hope so.
Yeah, so that'd be fun. Of course, you can email us at outnowpodcast@gmail.com, and you can express whether or not you believe in Jordan Grout and his hatred for the Spider-Man film, or and whether or not, Yeah, actually, I'm curious of people that are comic readers versus people that are just casually fans of Spider-Man and what their thoughts on the Spider-Man movie were. So, have any emails like that, that'd be cool. Or, posts on Facebook on the Twitter page, facebook.com/outnowpodcast or twitter.com/outnow_podcast. Anywhere you can post or email us, it's all good.
Yeah.
Welcome to read those out on the air and, field our own, thoughts and opinions and what have you. So, I think we'll be doing a little bit of spoilers after the end of this, and I think we might post like a Savages mini review like at the very end of this too if we have time. But for anyone that's not carrying on from here, that's gonna do it this week for Out Now with Aaron and Abe. So until next time, so long
and goodbye.
Kisses.
Thwip thwip.
Whatever a spider can, spins a web any size, catches thieves just like flies. Look out, here comes a Spider-Man. Is he strong? Listen, bud, he's got radioactive blood. Can he swing from a thread? Take a look overhead. Hey there, there goes a Spider-Man in the chair night at the scene of a crime. Like a streak of light, he arrives just in time. Spider-Man, Spider-Man, friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. Wealth and fame he's ignored, action is his reward. Look out, there goes a Spider-Man. Watch out, Mr. Eisenberg. A streak of light, He arrives just in time. Spider-Man, friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. Wealth and fame he's ignored. Action is his reward. To him, life is a great big hang up. Wherever there's a hang up, you'll find the Spider-Man.
So we are back now with some spoilery talk, I guess, for The Amazing Spider-Man. And anything in particular you want to get into, Jordan?
Cool. I mean, we could talk about the after credits scene where we've got possibly Electro, possibly the Vulture, possibly even Norman Osborn, depending on who you want to believe. We could talk about George Stacy dying.
Let's talk about the post-credit scene first. Let's go into the... So let's just set it up, I guess, for anyone that perhaps walked out of Spider-Man but wanted to listen to this podcast about it. Basically, the mid... It's not even a post-credit. The mid-credit sequence, yeah, which is kind of refreshing. We get to, like, the... Dr. Connors is in a jail cell, and suddenly, out of the shadows, someone emerges, playing with, like, his hat, and he has kind of a weird accent, and he's talking, "You didn't really tell Peter about his father, did you?" And he says just like that. Then Kirk Connors is like, "No," or whatever, and then the guy is like, "Ah," and then he disappears. That's it in a nutshell.
Right.
And so there's a lot of speculation as to who this person could have been.
Right. We know it's got to be someone with connections to Oscorp, so that works for at least Electro or Green Goblin for sure.
Yeah.
And some people say they saw lightning in the scene, which would also speak to Electro. I don't know if I saw that personally. Well, I don't remember.
I hear a lightning strike, and you kind of see a flash of light and like the... But I don't think you don't really see like a lightning bolt in the film. That's for sure.
Right.
So yeah, I guess Electro. I mean, that's pretty on the nose. I think. Yeah, a lot of speculation. I honestly, you know, it's a placeholder. Like, it seems like they can do whatever they want with that kind of scene. Although it's very specific in terms of having a character like this who's wearing like, I guess, a trench coat and like has a hat in his hand and has a very specific accent. So like, I don't know. It was so vague and kind of like, I didn't care that much about what the scene was, that it didn't mean much to me. That was kind of where I was coming in.
Yeah.
I am curious to find out what happened to Peter's parents, though, in this universe, because it can't be what happened to them in the actual comic book universe.
What happens in the actual comic book
universe? Which comic book universe? There's, like, multiple, like, ways to...
Well, I don't know if they ever talked about it in the Ultimate Spider-Man comics, although they probably did. I haven't read too many of those. But in regular Marvel 616 continuity, Peter Parker's parents, which, hey, there's a good tongue twister for you, they were S.H.I.E.L.D. agents. And if I remember correctly, they were shot down over Latveria, where I don't know if it was Dr. Doom who killed them or what, or if they died in the plane crash, but it has too many connections to the actual Marvel universe that they wouldn't be able to do it the same way in this one, for sure.
Yeah, the plane crash thing is, like, constantly, I think, was, like, referenced.
Right. That's not owned by anybody's IP.
And
Boeing's not going to be suing them.
And there's other versions, like... There's some fan speculation that it could be actually Richard Parker, like his... Richard Parker, right?
Yeah.
Right. Richard
and... actually be his father. That's the one talking to him in the cell. Oh, that's weird. Like that. So
that could be very interesting.
So, yeah. So,
but I think the reason... The vibe that I got from it is just that I don't really care. It's exactly what Aaron's saying. It's so open to interpretation that I was thinking to myself, okay, I guess I'm not even that excited. I'm just going to wait for them to reveal it, like, in a year or two.
Right.
It was kind of a bummer. It's a tease, yes, but it's not a very interesting tease.
Speaking of his parents, what did you guys think of it being his father who actually was the one who genetically engineered the spiders that ended up biting Peter?
I liked it enough just because it separated it from, you know, the previous film, and it felt... That's in line with the Ultimate series, correct? Or
I believe so,
like,
yes.
We know, like, his father did work for Oscorp in that series, in that version.
In that universe, yes.
So, I mean, I liked it just because, yeah, it was different from, like, how the original was set up. But again, it came... Because the tagline's literally the untold story, I was hoping to see more of that stuff. And, yeah, that's fine that they want to save it for a sequel, but the movie...
Well,
it was depending on telling me that stuff, and it didn't quite...
I can't blame Mark Webb for that, though, or the writers or anything. That's Sony's marketing
department. I know, yes.
That's
it's,
different group of people.
Yeah, it's a. I mean, it's a weird it's place true. To come at it. So, like, I'm not necessarily mad at the movie, but at the same time, there's a certain expectation that didn't deliver.
Right, right. No, I got you. I got
but,
you.
But sure. Yeah, I mean, see, yeah, that. Yes, the whole aspect of Peter's father being directly involved in that, in, like, genetically altering spiders or, you know, working with Dr. Connors and all that. That I like that stuff, and I'm curious to see more about, like, how deep that goes, I guess.
Now, Aaron, I think before we started recording, you mentioned you knew this was coming. But, Abe, did you know that George Stacy dies before you walked into this movie?
I didn't know, but there were hints along the way, and there were the hints of, like, where Gwen Stacy's talking to Peter, and she's like, oh, every day that he put on that badge, I was, you know, I wondered if he was going to come home. And then, yes, it was very telling when she develops the serum and he just goes up and he's like, you know, go back, whatever, whatever. It was very telling. And I found it, I didn't know, and that's why I think I was like, oh, wow, this is actually a good, like, it's not a good thing, but it was just like, this made the movie a little bit more serious, a little bit more better than I thought it was going to be, because... again, I did like Dennis Leary a lot in the film, and I also liked his story arc. And I really questioned, oh, and now he knows who Spider-Man is.
So it's like, clearly, so... I was thinking, he can't live at this point.
What am I, the mayor of Tokyo?
Kept secret, but yeah, I did not know that he was going to die going in.
Yeah, I mean, I know obviously the character eventually dies, but I didn't pick up on it until right before he walked into the building at the end. I was like, oh, so they're going to do it in this one. Uh-huh. And so I saw it coming, but I thought it worked well. I thought it even possibly worked better than Uncle Ben's death in the movie, or either version of Uncle Ben's death.
Yeah.
It was much more directly moving, if you will. Plus, I mean, I mentioned it in the actual episode, but the whole Peter promising to stay away from Gwen to protect her, and then right at the end turning back on that and very clearly hinting that he's not going to follow that promise – it doesn't mean a whole lot for this movie, although I thought it worked as an ending. But for when she eventually, spoilers, when she eventually dies, that's going to be huge, because that's the moment that he signed her death warrant, essentially.
Hmm. So that whole entire promise does come back in subsequent...
Well, presuming that Emma Stone or Gwen Stacy does die in this film series, yeah, it's like...
Which I think they will, because they've done a good job of following the comics. So
yeah, and you didn't, so okay. That's going to reflect on him poorly. Now... It was neat that Spider-Man's apparently much less, you know, stubborn about sticking to rules, because, you know, with the first series you have Willem Dafoe say, don't tell Harry at the end of Green, and then he holds to that promise, which causes all sorts of problems for Peter Parker and Harry Osborn throughout that series, since he's, you know, not telling him that Spider-Man didn't in fact kill his father you're leaving it up to Exposition Butler to do it in...
Exposition Butler. I just read something about that the other day.
Mr. Paxton, that's Bill Paxton's father.
Is it really?
Yeah,
really.
He played the butler in the...
Wait, Paxton or Pullman?
Paxton. things I never confuse, Bill Paxton, Bill Pullman. That's different.
I always get their fathers mixed up, but I have no problem with that. What else? I thought Emma Stone just absolutely looked the part. I thought that was amazing how close they stuck to it. Oh, you know what we never talked about?
What?
Stan Lee's cameo, which was fantastic.
That's perfect for spoilers.
I like that a lot.
His cameo is amazing in this movie. Yeah. It's so much fun, and it's very creative. And
the CG behind it was really cool, too.
It was. That was the part where I was like, this is that's part of why I really like the school action sequence. I think there's a lot of different stuff that you haven't seen before in a Spider-Man movie of him, like, crawling on the ceilings, crawling over the walls, going through him changing mid-fight, like, into Spider-Man. It's just, like, using the webs to capture his villain all up in a web and everything. There's just a lot of really cool stuff. And, yeah, then you have a whole, like, silent, like, a whole, you know,
juxtaposed?
You have this whole juxtaposition of Spider-Man and the lizard fighting in the background while, like, Stan Lee's blasting music in his earphones and, like, not
just
noticing anything.
Books away.
And I'm like, and it's cool in the 3D because, like, the table flies at him and then Spider-Man pulls it away at the last second. It was like, that's a really cool shot. And it's like a one-er. It's a one-take scene, too. It's like, that's just really well done.
Sure, it is one take.
So, what's your opinion? Does Aunt May know by the end? I say she does.
You know, that's weird. I don't know, but at the same time, we didn't talk about this in the regular thing, but I also didn't like the relationship between Peter Parker and Emmy. I didn't think it was actually really there a lot, and I think that it's probably going to come around in subsequent features, but just as a starting point, it really didn't seem, I don't know, like, she kind of, it just seems like Peter Parker is such a jerk.
I would agree that she's not as much of a present in this film, just because it's more about Ben Parker in this one, even though I mean, you only get so much time with him, and there's other things going on in this Spider-Man movie that you can't reflect too much on the Aunt May-Peter Parker relationship. Uh-huh. But I do think their scenes work. I think the scene, like, when Peter Parker gets home, like, that first... And one of those first nights, and he's all beat up, yeah, and, he, and Aunt May's worried sick about him, and he says, just go to sleep, Aunt May! He's like, it's really affecting. I think it's a really... I think these actors are good enough in these roles where you don't need to have too much fleshed out in this relationship right away, where you can save some of that for the next couple movies.
But I don't think she knows.
Really?
I would say that she doesn't want to believe it.
Huh.
Okay, well, I could get behind that, but I thought it was fairly clear when she was watching that news footage that she was picking up on it.
I'll have to watch it a second time.
And to be honest, the fact that, you know, I say she does, you say she doesn't, and Aaron's kind of in the middle, that does reflect in many ways the comic, where for years and years and years, and it's gone back and forth, but there was always the, she probably knows, but Peter still won't tell her for sure.
I see.
So, I mean, that works for me. And I was kind of with you. I didn't feel the relationship for most of the movie, but I thought by the end, I thought they'd kind of brought it back around.
Yeah, that egg part was pretty nice. Yeah, it works. And I was like, I completely forgot about it. And then when he brought out the eggs, it just, you know, it hinted. Plus his messed up smile that he has for her.
Really nice,
you know?
I mean,
I was waiting for all the eggs to be broken when he pulled them out of his backpack.
That's my main takeaway from this movie compared to the other movies and like origin movies in general, is that there's kind of a subtlety to the emotion, but I think it works well enough. That's what makes this movie stand out. That's like the key factor that makes this movie stand out to me, where I like the interactions with Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone and the interactions mm-hmm. between, like, even like the early scenes with just Ben and May, and like you see that relationship where you don't see like, oh, we've been married a long time. Like, they're not overemphasizing that fact. They're just,
you don't like my meatloaf?
Like, you just get their relationship based on the few lines of dialogue that they have together. And I think it's a credit to the actors that were chosen, how strong they are together, and just their general chemistry. And I think that's what makes it work. It's not like necessarily an overly emotional film, but a film that has that emotion going on.
Did you guys prefer mechanical web shooters, or did you like the organic?
I prefer mechanical web shooters.
I'm all about the mechanicals, but I kind of didn't see him change any cartridges, which is kind of a bummer. But at the same time, it's like, you know, John Woo style. It never runs out.
Well,
you know what was cool, though, was when the lizard took out his web.
That's right, yeah, and he didn't have them to use. Yeah.
That was a cool little twister, and I loved how there was kind of exploding on his wrist in a way. And it was cool they gave it an explanation for where they come from, because in the comics he makes them and they're sticky because of rubber cement, which is stupid.
I mean, that's so
the
old
stuff you used
that's,
to put
that's so old-fashioned like Stanley doing writing stuff, but like I like the mechanical web shooters and how they function in this movie. And I always like origin stories where you have the character like learning his powers, and I think this movie did a good job at that.
I think that one was different. I'd have to disagree there, because he gets bitten, and then on the subway ride home, he's just Spider-Man.
Yeah, you know? Doesn't take that whole night.
I know, but I liked how it took some time to incubate in his body in the Raimi series, and so it was like a nap. And
it
then
was the fast acting and acting version of Spider-Man. He gets bit.
Guaranteed to work under
6 hours. Like, he just becomes super strong. Like, I like the clumsiness of him, like, on the subway, like, doing...
knocking people out and ripping shirts
off.
Classic
right.
Spider-Man, just always sharking people.
Classic
like, sharking people. And... I liked, you know, him in the bathroom with his super strength.
Oh, yeah.
It reminded me of, like, John Carter, where he's learning how to jump on Mars. Like,
I liked that those comedy bits.
Yeah.
And then how he's just, like, catatonic in his bed because he doesn't want to touch anything after he breaks all the faucets and the doorknobs. And
like,
stuff.
I think there's some good, like, comedic moments. Like, cause especially because this movie was touted as being, you know, here we go, dark and gritty. It does a good balance, similar to, like, Raimi's films. And if you really want to go into how dark this movie is versus the first Spider-Man, only two people die in this movie. Over 10 people die in the first Spider-Man.
I mean, like, yeah, there's a lot of pumpkin explosions in that movie. But, you know, I don't really think of it as, like, a darker Spider-Man. I just think that it's darker literally in terms of the night shots. There's a lot more night shots, there's a lot more everything else. But yeah, you're right. I mean, dude, Willem Dafoe gets gored in this first movie. And there's blood on those whatever he is on his wing cruiser. There's, you know,
Goblin Glider.
Yeah, Goblin Glider. Yeah, it's pretty violent. And like Peter Parker gets the shit kicked out of him. You know, like, you can see the blood coming out when the...
Yeah,
when he
gets a beating handed to him at the end.
Yeah,
of
and
Spider-Man.
It's like, you know, but I think...
Although that does happen here, too, when you have to patch him up.
In terms of seeing him come back from, like, a night away as Spider-Man, you see him, he's bruised and battered, and like, it has that scene where he's like, go to sleep, Batman. Like, it's like, it reflects...
He's trying to...
It reflects that he is getting into... He's getting into some scrapes here. Like, it's not kid stuff that he's messing around with.
Yeah, I would say this one's more realistic as opposed to dark and gritty.
Yeah, for sure.
I saw a lot of reviews, and I wanted to get your guys' opinion on this, that complained about him being a skateboarder and saying that him riding a skateboard takes away the him being a nerd and turns him into, and this is a quote I've seen a lot, rad skateboarder kid. Now, for me, there's two ways you can go with this. One, the filmmakers view skateboarding as something that's cool and rebellious in X Games. Or the opinion I more took, which is skateboarding isn't cool anymore. I mean, if Tobey Maguire had been skateboarding in 2002, yeah, okay, that would be cool skateboarding kid X Games. But in 2012, him riding a skateboard is the equivalent of him riding a bike. It's not something that's cool. It's just something that exists now.
I agree with that. And I would also add, if Tobey Maguire as Peter Parker was skateboarding, that would make him even more nerdy. Just based on...
That's true, because I couldn't even see him standing.
It's like modern-day skateboards. It's like Ninja Turtle style, where like it waves. It's like a fish pattern.
Yeah.
And this was a really crappy skateboard, too.
Yeah, broke. But yeah, I completely agree with what you just said. I had no problem with him being a person that rides a skateboard. It didn't seem like it was anything, like, edgy. It just felt like, he's a teenager in high school. He's a skateboarder.
I agree with that. It's just kind of normal now. I mean,
especially given what we know about how Andrew Garfield plays his character, where he is a bright student, but he's late to class, and he has a bit of an attitude at times. Like he fits the realm of being kind of a social outcast, misfit, geeky teenager. Like he has all of these things go into this one character.
He feels very real.
Yeah.
Which I definitely appreciate. But yeah, just the whole idea of skateboarding being cool made me think, like, I don't think it is anymore.
It's not like he has a freaking slingshot in his back pocket. He's saying, he starts Simpsoning it around.
He's wearing those paper rounds like Bugs Meany from Encyclopedia Brown.
He's not trying to jump the New York Gorge. Like.
Now, granted, there are some cool skateboarding tricks once he gets his powers, but there's nothing even close to that before.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
If he was skateboarding like in the sewers as Spider-Man, then I'd have a problem with it.
Something that reminded me of Bart Simpson a lot was when he's fighting the lizard in the sewers and he's created that giant web, he's got his camera going and it flashes, and then the lizard finds it, so like property of Peter Parker. It reminded me of the Simpsons episode where Bart puts the thing down the well. It's like property of Bart Simpson, so he has to go and retrieve it, but he ends up falling in the well instead. Oh gosh.
Sending our love down the well.
Yeah.
That was a cool camera too.
It was. It's like classic. I was upset when Flash broke it. I was like, damn it.
I was annoyed at bully scenes just because bully scenes always frustrate me, like, no matter how, like, real or whatever they are. But I'm always like, what is he doing? Like, why would you need to kick his camera? What does that accomplish? Like,
I was at least happy that Peter stood up to him, because that's something.
Forcing him to eat pizza upside down? It's like,
don't eat it.
Yeah, don't eat it, man.
Watch your back.
No one likes upside down pizza.
Crust first. That's crazy.
I was happy that I guess Gwen Stacy's not like Flash Thompson's boyfriend, because
at first I thought that
she would be really weird as Flash Thompson's boyfriend.
It would, yeah. And at first it seemed like that's what they were trying to go for. Right. It was like, oh no, she's just like tutoring him or whatever. Okay, yeah. So that didn't.
Yeah, and she. I mean, she's smart in this movie. She has an internship at Oscorp. She's top of her class. She talks down Flash. She's a very strong female character.
So many things about Gwen Stacy made me happy in the direction they chose of her, where she's not like goo goo gaga over Spider-Man, and she's not like the damsel in distress at the end of the movie, and she's not the boyfriend to the jock bully. Like, all of these things are completely different from like how you see that a lot in other like movies that have this token female character love interest for the main character.
Even in the first Spider-Man trilogy, she's very much the anti-Mary Jane.
Yeah.
There's a funny bit that Aaron says, like, apparently Peter Parker / Tobey Maguire is the only person that sees this abuse going on right next door.
And does nothing about it for the longest time.
Yeah, but Gwen Stacy, she's like a good kid. She has a nice family. Like, she has a father that cares about her. Like, the scene where Dennis Leary is getting like hot cocoa, is trying to ask for hot cocoa. Yeah. Regardless of the comedy parts, there's one part that like no one else is gonna laugh at. But when it's like Dennis Leary's like, it's good. And he like kind of like fucking up this hot cocoa that he wants to give to Gwen Stacy.
Now compare in the original Spider-Man movie, you've got the upside down rain kiss. I really liked in this one how they had the web swing to the, or the web to the butt slash spin around in a tango move kiss.
I liked it just because I liked him revealing himself as Spider-Man this early on and them getting together in general this early on. And it's not going to be a series of movies where she doesn't know who Peter Parker is and can she or won't she get with Peter Parker. I like how it just tackled that right away and then, you know, let that relationship play out kind of on the side as opposed to, again, kind of distancing itself from the other Spider-Man films. It kind of,
That's true.
It took a different approach to it.
And again, if and when she does die, this is going to be yet another nail in her coffin, is him telling her.
Yeah.
So it's building to an arc that people aren't even going to realize yet.
Which, yeah, as a casual viewer, I wouldn't realize that, or I did not realize that.
There's a lot of lizards in New York.
Yeah, there are. And out during the daytime.
That's only because they were being, you know, attracted to the lizard, but it still came off as weird.
Yeah, that's how I was kind of understanding.
What about the lizard rat, Lizard Fred?
I like how he's just, like, sitting there. Reminds me of Pinky and the Brain, if Brain just went all crazy and just started eating Pinky.
Yeah. Fred eating Wilma was a bit disturbing.
Okay, here's another thing that I kind of had an issue with that might have been lost in deleted scenes or something, but if the lizard sprays you with lizard aerosol spray, whatever, like, you should go back to that scene and not just show them slightly turning into lizards and then slightly turning back from lizards. Like, there should have been a scene where you see why that's a bad thing.
Or at least show one of them getting away or something into the sewer.
There was no reason to show him turning people into lizards if you weren't going to deliver on that aspect of the story. And it might have been deleted, which...
Yeah,
it could have been.
I know you like the movie a lot, Jordan, and, like, I like the movie too, but it does seem there are clear, like, edits going on where it seems like there was a lot of stuff taken out of this movie before it came out.
There's even a lot of stuff in trailers and scenes they've released earlier. I mean, I went into Media Blackout about 3 weeks ago, but even before that, there's stuff I've seen that wasn't in this movie.
Yeah, there's things like Risa Fon saying, you want to know the real story behind your father, Peter? Like, just stuff like that.
Right. Again, or them standing in front of a blackboard with all the math on it, or the scene with Peter and the doorman. So it is interesting to me just how much stuff in the promo material wasn't in the final movie.
Yeah, which is kind of unfortunate because they did so much marketing for this movie, like way too much marketing.
They did a lot of marketing. During the NBA Finals, it was on every commercial break.
Small knives.
Yeah.
All right, so, yeah, okay. Now I think let's just wrap it up here. I think we've done enough spoilery talky stuff. And depending on where this falls into the podcast, this will either come before or after our mini thoughts on Savages. So we'll see how that plays out. But Jordan, thanks for being on the show with us today.
Hey, no problem. Thank you for having me on.
For sure.
Anytime.
Yeah. And to do it again, so long.
And goodbye.
Face the Tiger, you just hit the jackpot.
Nice.
It is your methods we want to partner with. We're not going to join you. Nothing personal.
I'm afraid our client would take this very personally.
They must be taught respect.
I found their weakness.
Oh my god. I'd take the deal instead of decapitation.
They took our girl, and I will do anything, anything to get her back.
You stabbed a federal agent!
Dead?
He told you they'd come for me.
Stop.
Let me remind you that if I had to, I wouldn't have a problem cutting both their throats.
Okay, we are back recording some more.
Woohoo!
This is Abe and I, Abe and Aaron. Now Aaron and Abe, we're doing our special Savages mini review because why not? And once again, we are both together in the same area. Literally walking and talking as we review
West Wing style, baby.
All right, so we just got out of Savages a little while ago. Oliver Stone's new movie, which stars Taylor Kitsch, Aaron Johnson, Blake Lively, Benicio del Toro, Salma Hayek, and John Travolta. Oliver Stone movie about two guys. They're really good at growing weed. Blake Lively's really good at juggling their penises. The Mexican cartel wants a piece of this action.
these guys, they kind of say no, and so they kidnap Blake Lively in response, and, you know, mayhem ensues from there. Abe, what did you think of Savages?
I actually had a fun time with it. I think that it was fun to some extent. One of our guests that we have on the show, Mark Hoban.
Yeah, we actually got to meet Mark Hoban in person and see the movie with him, and it was, yeah, that was
Where
cool.
Where were you, Jordan?
Yeah, Jordan.
No, but he said the best. You know, it had its moments. I definitely like the characters of Benicio del Toro, and I also really like Selma Hayek as well. I love that they brought this nice cartel drama to the movie. I liked the movie, especially when it turned into kind of like a revenge story for Tim Riggins and Kick-Ass.
I can agree with that.
Yeah, when they're like, you know what, we're going to get you instead. I really liked when they started getting a little bit more into the driver's seat, so to speak. So overall, I had a fun time. I could do a lot without Blake Lively narrating everything. And like the clue stuff I could do without too. So, but yeah, on the whole, not too bad.
Yeah, I basically agree with your sentiments. I like basically the older actors more than I like the younger actors in this movie. And yeah, Blake Lively's narration was pretty annoying. I did like seeing like an Oliver Stone movie that was kind of having somewhat more fun lately than he has in a while. But at the same time, it is pretty serious and intense throughout a lot of the movie, and I wish it kind of had more of a, not necessarily a goofy tone or a jokey tone, but I wish it just kind of Stone dialed down his stoniness and how he was going about, you know, having this movie work.
There were some funny moments.
There are funny moments. There's some key moments, and I think I wish there was kind of more, not necessarily lightheartedness, but more of those moments where I could kind of enjoy the movie on like a Snatch sort of level, where like it's kind of like, certainly there's, I mean, it's a, there is gritty mob things happening, but it's also a fun movie to enjoy. I think Savages, it didn't quite get there for me.
And I think that one of the things that I just also didn't like about it was that there was some kind of meaning that Blake Lively was trying to put together at the end there. And for me, I was just thinking to myself, let's not even go there. I mean, I don't think that this is some kind of meta, you know, journey that you went on and you have to make some kind of meaning out of it. It's just more of, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, well, yeah, because it doesn't help that I just don't care about Blake Lively's character in the movie, just because she's, you know, the girlfriend of both of these guys in this movie. And so for being that character, you want an actress that kind of, you know, she's the Helen of Troy for these two people.
Right.
And I don't get that from Blake Lively, and her narration didn't help, and her in general, she hasn't done much for me to make me, you know, impressed with her, so.
You weren't impressed with her in Green Lantern?
I was impressed that she was able to discover Ryan Reynolds' cheekbones and understand that he was actually Green Lantern. But, no, not as, like, that. I admire, like, these guys for they want to get their girl back. Like, that's commendable, I guess. But, yeah, Blake Lively, she didn't quite do it for me in that regard.
Yeah. Another person that we talked about, John Travolta. I actually found him to be, He's like, goofy, charismatic in this movie, because he says, like, all the wrong things at the wrong times, but then he's squirrely in this movie, and I like that about him.
And I did, too, and that's what I'm saying. I like the older actors in the movie. I like Benicio del Toro a lot. He was quite menacing.
Yes.
And I like John Travolta, because he was having kind of fun in the role in the movie. You know, it found what it should be going for with the scenes with those characters and Selma Hayek's character, who I also liked in this movie a lot more than I thought I was.
Same here, I was expecting to.
I found her to be a combination of both menacing, but kind of like in on like what the tone of this movie should be. And I liked those scenes involving those, you know, those actors and, you know, scenes like that. And I wish I basically saw that movie that's just more of that stuff, more of the cartel inner goings-ons. And
so this is almost like as if Traffic, if what's-her-face?
Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Yeah, if she basically took over her husband's cartel.
I actually did think of Traffic. I mean, we don't need to go into a whole full-on movie callback thing, but I thought of Traffic while watching this movie, and I thought of, like, Way of the Gun, actually.
I thought about that, too. Yeah.
And just movies like that and how they, I mean, Traffic is obviously a lot more serious, but Way of the Gun, that's a movie that handles its tone very well, in my opinion. A movie I know many people have not seen, but I like that movie a lot. And, like, I was happy with how that movie kind of went about doing it. So.
Yeah, same here. I was reminded of the Way of the Gun, especially right when Taylor Kitsch is like, this is like Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, well.
And even there, like, that's an area where I thought, I mean, it's playing, like, direct calling. It's calling directly onto, like, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. That's, like, I wish if the movie, like, as resembled that, like, more. Like,
yeah.
That would have been more fun for me. I mean, obviously, the girl's kidnapped in this movie, so it's different, but, like, if you want to reference that movie, I wish it would do more with, like, that kind of thing. And
yeah. So, I mean, on the whole, I mean, I found it to be fun enough and intriguing enough for general audiences to come in and say, oh, well, what's this all about? But at the same time, yeah, there's some parts where it does take itself quite seriously.
And it is pretty intense. I mean, you have, like,
yeah, people being... Yeah, it's pretty
graphic. Pretty graphic and violent.
People are tortured... Pretty brutally.
There's some torture going on. There's some brutality. There's some violence. Actually, some of the action-y stuff was pretty kind of cool. Like those sequences that involves, like, when they kind of take some of the matters into their own hands. And I like Oliver Stone's direction to this movie. Like, it wasn't, like, super crazy flashy, like something like Natural Born Killers, which uses, like, all kinds of cameras and all kinds of various film types. It's just a really intensely filmed movie. This one also could have been like something like Domino from Tony Scott, which is like, or Man on Fire, which is him.
Oh,
and like,
Man on Fire, yeah. There you go,
those are movies that are like Tony Scott on overdrive, and Oliver Stone could have done it like that. But I liked what he did with this movie in terms of how he kind of played it out with his filming style. It wasn't like overly stylish, but there was enough there, and like his use of music was very much felt like an Oliver Stone movie. It kind of had classical music going on. There's certain repeated rhythms and things. I liked what he did in this. It seemed like he was having fun as a director of a movie that doesn't seem to, you know, it's not World Trade Center, it's not W, it's not some of the other heavier
JFK.
It's not some of the other heavier films he's been doing recently, and so.
There's a bus coming by right now.
Yeah, there is. We're walking and talking. We were joking about this.
The snare may not be edited out.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how well it sounds. But, there are things I liked about the movie for sure. I certainly didn't outright hate the movie. And then, like Abe said, it's fun enough. It could have been a little more fun or a little more enjoyable if it wasn't so brutal. But, for being like a movie that comes out in the middle of the summer, it's like, you don't really quite want to see something so intense. But
I mean, I didn't so much mind the brutality because it's kind of like, oh, yeah, this is what the cartels do. But, the violence in itself was something that you would expect from a movie like this.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So it's not like everyone's blasting right away. Overall, I actually really liked Tim Riggins in this movie, too, Taylor Kitsch. He's kind of a more quiet, like, brutish type. And Aaron and I were talking about this, you know, we saw Battleship and John Carter, which, you know, we liked his performance in both of those. But, you know, this is kind of him playing a more subdued guy. And it fits well, because he can pull that off.
I agree with that. I wasn't too much into Aaron Johnson, though.
Into Kick-Ass?
Into Kick-Ass in this movie.
Was it because, like, he was kind of like a guy who was going through more transitions?
I just think...
He had more story arc.
It just didn't feel like... Well, I felt like, I mean, he's supposed to be, like, not necessarily a Buddhist, but he's certainly, like, he's
more religious.
He's more religious. He's more spiritual.
Right.
And also, in the way, the certain lines he had to deliver, I didn't feel the power of what he was trying to say in certain scenes, of him trying to convince people of certain things, of him trying to relay certain types of information, given
his age
and kind of
his own standing in his own life, how he sees himself.
Yes.
Yeah.
Especially because these guys are supposed to. I mean, I don't know how old these guys are supposed to be.
Like, maybe like
seems
mid
like they're
to
supposed
late
to be
20s.
Mid late 20s, but like Tim Riggins is, you know, he's supposed to be an ex Navy SEAL. Like, I don't exactly know how old the ages are on ex Navy SEALs, but he seemed pretty young to be an ex Navy SEAL. And Kick-Ass, he's, you know, the guy's a teen. I mean, in real life, he's like a teenager.
Yeah, he's like, I think he's younger than we are.
Yes, he is. So it's like, I didn't quite feel the authority needed in some of what Aaron Johnson was having to say.
Yeah. Especially, like, when he has, like, a tense meeting with Benicio Del Toro.
Yeah.
And, I see that.
See, there's a scene. That's a perfect scene. He has to meet up with Benicio Del Toro.
Yeah.
So, okay, so let's get to, like, our rating, I guess. You know, we have our scale, and this is a mini-episode, so I'm not even going to repeat the scale. I'm just going to say, Abe, what would you rate this movie?
I'd actually say Dollar Theater. You know, it's something that, it's fun, but you don't have to watch it right away.
yeah, I agree with that. Dollar Theater sounds about right to me. And, yeah, so that's our little mini-review of Savages. Cool.
Exclusive.
Exclusive. Aaron and Abe.
At night, yeah. All right.
So long.
And goodbye.